Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. Okay, welcome to MyBoxingFan.com's official radio show, Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, David Duenas, with my co-hosts, Gable Montoya and Ernesto Gabillon. Gable should be calling in a short minute. He's on a deadline right now. He's got tons of things going on. I know he went to the pre-screening of The Fighter, the movie about Mickey Ward and his trials through life being a prize fighter and with his brother. I had a chance to read a little bit on the book. I didn't get to complete it and stuff like that, but, and I've been wanting to see this movie. This actually has been a movie up for a while that's been in the works, but it's always been shelved up, where the studios just didn't have enough money, or maybe it was just not any belief in it. But now it's incomplete and it's coming out, and you have, Mark Wahlberg, who's going to be playing Mickey Ward, and you're going to have, Christopher Bale, I believe his name, is going to be playing his brother and stuff, and it should be a really interesting movie. Let me patch in my co-host Gable. What's up, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Sorry, I'm running a little late here. I'm up against a deadline with a story. You were talking about The Fighter.
I was talking about the movie The Fighter, and I was saying you're on this deadline, so I know that you're pressing for time as well as I'm pressing for time right now. And stuff. Yeah, how did the movie go anyways? How was the pre-screening of it?
I saw it last night. I had mixed feelings about it. You know, it's interesting. It's not what people would think in terms of it's not about Gotti Ward, which is what everybody, when they think of, you know, Mickey Ward, they think of Arturo Gotti just because of their great trilogy. What it is the fight leading up to that Gotti fight. And it basically tells the story of how this guy was pretty much on the scrap heap. He had seven losses at this point. And they kind of, it's Hollywood, so they kind of leave a few losses out. They don't deal with the Zab Judah fight. They don't deal with the Emmanuel Augustus fight or the Antonio Diaz fight. But they deal with everything leading up to the Shane Neary fight, which is when he won the WBO or WBU junior welterweight title. So it's kind of basically how his life kind of turned and his career turned and headed towards the Gotti fights and where he was able to kind of cash out in these great wars. Christian Bale's absolutely spectacular, in my opinion, as Dickie Eklund, the stepbrother and trainer of Mickey Ward. I actually thought that Mark Wahlberg did a really nice job. Mickey Ward's kind of a tough character to do because he's such a quiet guy, but there's these moments where he kind of gets this look in his eye and this expression, and he looks a lot like Mickey Ward in it, even though I went in thinking he kind of looks more like Arturo Gotti. But, man, Christian Bale just absolutely steals it. And the thing that I didn't like about it, and I don't want to prejudice people going in because I think everybody should see it because they should support boxing in every way.
Right.
And the acting is very well done. The boxing scenes were killing me. they just didn't quite... I'm a longtime theater guy, and I've done film and stuff, so I'm critical of these things. I've watched a lot of boxing movies, and I just felt the fight scenes, they just didn't, other than the Sanchez fight, which is a pretty famous fight, and he beat Alfonso Sanchez and knocked him out to the body in a kind of a listless performance until that moment. They got that one pretty right, but there was like this montage where dudes just looked like they weren't really getting hit, and I don't know. I wasn't crazy about the boxing scenes, and maybe that's just because I watch.
What do you mean that they were making him? Were they making it like he was this elusive guy at the time, or what?
No. It was just the way you'll have to see it. Is it the way they filmed them? I didn't get a sense of when you watch Rocky, you kind of get a sense of story and Raging Bull in the fight. Like this is what's happening now, and then this is happening then, and then here it's big climax. And this was like, it felt like The Contender, where they were like, they cut to the family, they cut to the fight, kind of, and then they cut back to other people. It was like the director had never filmed action before, and they just didn't quite know how to film a fight. And some guys, you know, like our guy Brian Hardy at Max Boxing, I think he films sparring beautifully. He really knows how to capture the movement in the ring. It's not an easy thing to do. And I, that was the one, it just, some of the punches didn't look great. Some of the editing choices, just had to see it. I'm a nitpicky film goer, but for me it was like, you know, I'm a boxing guy, and Bill Dwyer from LA Times was there, and we're like, if you can't convince me with the boxing stuff, it's going to be hard for me to watch a movie called The Fighter.
Yeah,
but I would go
yeah.
see it if I were a fight fan.
Well, you know what? I mean, I got to say this first off. You know, when I heard that Mark Wahlberg was going to play the main character of Mickey Ward, I wasn't too excited about it, and did like the fact that they brought on Christian Bale, who's a good actor. Guy plays Batman in other numerous movies. The Mechanic, who he was really good in, where he lost a lot of weight to capture the guy that was hallucinating, you know, and because of a car wreck, he had murdered a small child and a wife, I believe. I can't remember the whole movie and stuff. But, you know, Mark was – he's not one of those guys that you know that is a sound actor. So I wasn't too sure whether or not they were going to be able to pull it off. And it's – you know, it kind of sucks to hear that the sequences of the fights is not that great because, you know, when I seen him back in – God, when was it? I think it was when did Manny Pacquiao fight Oscar De La Hoya? 2008?
That's when they first started. He trained for 4.5 years. And
exactly.
That's,
you know,
the thing is, I don't blame the actors though. That's the thing. It's more of a. It's more the way the director shot it. I honestly felt that Christian Bale and Mark Wahlberg, much the way I felt about Will Smith and Ali, was that the work they put in and the acting that they did was better than the movie. And in this sense, it was like when it was just acting. And I laughed during the film. I was emotionally invested. I was into the movie. Then
right.
when we got to the fight scenes, I was kind of.
And you
out
just
of
lost
it.
You. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it just kind of lost me. And you know, I didn't really talk to them about that today. It was very quick interviews. And I haven't really written my review of it. And I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to warn people off. If you're a Mickey Ward fan, you're probably going to want to go see these. And there's really no substitute for the fights themselves anyways, you know.
You know, I mean, if you're not a person that's going to pick up a book and read the autobiography of a fighter or, you know, what they've gone through, then you want to go to the movie. I don't know how much they were able to capture what the life of Mickey, you know, coming up. I mean, the guy lived a hard life. Him and his brother,
yeah.
you know, they did a very tough life. His brother was actually said to have been a better technician in the ring, you know, and
yeah, that was what's interesting about it. Yeah, the differences in the two guys is that you hit it exactly right. Like, one guy's a technician and really talkative, and Ward is like this brawler and like really quiet. And they nailed that. I thought they really nailed that whole aspect.
Right.
It was just, you know, I will say this: everybody in the room loved the movie, except for I think me and Bill Dwyer. But you know, the two boxing guys in the room were kind of like, eh. Everything else was good, but the boxing itself was kind of not great. But I thought the movie itself was good. It might be a little too touchy-feely for some people. Like, you know, honestly, I don't really need to see Mickey Ward in a love scene. That's just me. But Amy Adams is really good. She's pretty convincing as Charlene, his wife, his girlfriend at the time. And everybody, they really nailed the flavor and the feel of Lowell, Massachusetts. They shot it there. All that stuff is good. Like I said, if you don't mind kind of looking at the fight scenes and going, I don't know.
Right.
You know, then,
right.
You know, but I'm real hard to please when it comes to movies, dude. You know, you don't ask. I didn't like Due Date. You know, I was telling everybody that it was a crappy movie. Everybody else was like, oh, it's really funny. And I was like, well, I liked it better when it was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. But, you know, so I think people should see it, though. Definitely support it. And it's just Hollywood taking a look at us and doing a movie and you know, about boxing, and that's something that we probably should support. I don't think it's a bad movie, and I'm saying go, you know, buy a pay-per-view because we should. It's worth seeing, and it's part of his history that many people may not know. They just know the Gotti fights, you know. So,
yep.
It's like one thumb up and like one thumb sideways.
Well, I tell you what, you know, it's you can kind of say what happened this past Saturday night. You have a few thumbs up and a few thumbs sideways. You know, fight fans have their thumbs sideways with Andre Ward's performance over Sakio Bika at the Oracle Arena in Oakland, California. Then you have way thumbs up with Jason Litsau. Litsu. Is it Litsau or Litsu?
It's Litsau.
Litsau, right? Yeah, Litsau. His performance after Celestino Caballero, a lot of us, and including myself, was very surprised that he was able to pull it off. I did say that it was going to be – I thought it was an interesting matchup, you know. But we just thought the volume punching and the work rate that Caballero has brought to the table was going to be just a little too much for Jason, and obviously we were way off. Even the odds, the betting odds in this fight was way, way, way off, and Jason had one great fight left. Is it his last great fight left in him? I don't know. I think this is an ultra high for his for himself and his career, because this is actually one of the best wins he's had. I mean, Rocky Warriors, you can arguably say that the guy is really out the door. Celestino, you have an argument saying that the guy always had an amateur type of style, didn't have good balance, didn't throw the proper punches the way he's supposed to throw them. He slaps his punches, but then you can have the argument. Well, let's not forget, Caballero was calling out Lopez and Gamboa, and they rightfully did not want to face this tall, lanky featherweight at the time, but he moved up to 130, and he gets a shot at Jason, and Jason showed, hey, he showed the flaws in that fight. It was a great, exciting fight. What were your thoughts about that game?
I was so happy for him, you know, and I don't generally, you know, root for one guy or the other, but it's interesting. I mean, actually looking at it in that kind of Mickey Ward vein, or even Sergio Martinez, you know, I did that the epic story this week, the two-parter on him. And he hit a point, both of them, in their careers where people were like, talking to them one way, yeah, we'll get you this great fight. Here's a title fight. You know, like Martinez had a title fight in England. They brought him over. He was doing well in Spain. They bring him to England as a B-side, you know, for this other guy. And he wins. And they brought him back two more times as basically to get their title back that they had. And he won both those fights by knockout. And in this case with Litsau, if they put him in with Juan Diaz, not to try to have him win, but to kind of, you know, see if not Juan Diaz, but, you know, Rocky Juarez, rather, same guy.
Right.
And, you know, so that he could get a, you know, get a get-back win on TV and maybe, you know, be moved as an opponent for somebody else or maybe do another title shot yet again. And Litsau comes out on top, and so he runs another shot on HBO and, you know, as an opponent. And boom, here he is again. You know, winning. It's just, it's like he kind of put it all together at the right time. And I was talking to a friend of mine about this fight. And I was heading over to, I'd just done a radio show in Washington that I've been doing for a long time, about a year or so now. And one of the guys is a friend of mine from there. And he's a fighter, an ex-fighter out of Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And he calls me and says, Jason's looking good in the gym, man. And he's like, I'm going to go over and check him out some more right now. I'm telling you, you know, I'm hearing good things. And I'm like, you know, yeah, but, you know, once Caballero starts to land on him and more volume, he's probably going to stop him. You know, Jason's at that point. And he just kind of kept saying, I don't know. And apparently he did know, because Jason did look good. And he basically did all the things that he didn't do, all the things that got him into trouble before. He boxed and hurt the guy and then stepped away. Didn't wait for the receipt, you know.
Right.
Instead, he just put a hurting on him and got out of there. Put a hurting on him, got out of there, and just kept winning rounds. Just and fought, not with desperation, not over anxious, trying to get the guy knocked out, but just enough to win. And if he'd have fought that way most of his career, he'd have been a problem to deal with. His problem was he always wanted to be really exciting, and he didn't mind his defense, and his career went the way it did. But maybe he's earned another payday now. You know, if there's justice in the world, he'll get another shot at somebody, maybe a little title or a big title, and we'll see. He just took out the most feared guy in the lower divisions.
Yeah, he did, and he did it in great fashion. You know, that was the key thing there, is that he took out the most feared guy in the lower weight division, and he took him out with, you know, I would have to say, Gabriel, with some ease. You know, Celestino looked very frustrated, but you could tell that he was being bothered by the right hand. He was being bothered by the movement. He was being bothered by the combinations. And then he was had nothing there to land after. You know, Litzau doing exactly what you just said right now. He was using boxing skills. He was using intelligence this time around in the ring, which he did against Rocky Juarez as well. You know, he did box a fairly good game against Rocky. We just didn't think that he was able to maintain it against a tall, lanky guy who likes to throw a lot of punches. But he was able to shut him down to a minimum, where to the point, Celestino was the one that was being very reserved. You know, he was actually, You could see he was kind of afraid of the return. What was going to be thrown back at him after he throws off a combo, you know. And that was really surprising. And how well Litzau was able to shut him down, you know. I don't know. Yeah,
it was impressive, man. It was really impressive. You could see little flashes of him wanting to mix it up and then pulling back, you know. And it was clear that that's what the game plan was, at least, you know, to me. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. We'll find out from him. But, you know, that it was. Like, dude, stay within yourself. You know, they always say that to, like quarterbacks. Stay within yourself. Don't try to, you know, throw across your body to the other side of the field. You know, just do what you can do and don't exceed that. You'll be fine. And that's, you know, that sounds, you know, he's fast. He's got power. He's big, even still for this weight class. You know, he was big as a featherweight, and he's big as a 130-pounder. And I still worry about him, you know, but at the same time, you know, you kind of worry the same way about all fighters, I guess, you know.
Absolutely.
If he's winning and he's protecting himself, then, you know, why not? You know, why not him? Make some money at the end of his career and do something, you know, after this. He's got a, you know, a newborn kid. He's got a young wife. And he's a young guy. He's not, you know, he's not like he's 30, you know.
And that could have been the change. I think that's the change of guard for him, is that he's changed his lifestyle, and you could really see that in his boxing, where before, like you said, he wanted to be an exciting fighter. He wanted to be a KO artist. He wanted to, you know, he really wanted to make an impact in the boxing world, where he just needed to really settle down. He was one of those kind of kids that kind of needed to be put on timeout because he was so hyper. You know, and then getting knocked out twice, you know, and it seems like this marriage and having a child has really kind of made him surface to that point where he's now a little bit mature. He's actually more mature, and you're just seeing that. You're seeing the fruits of that in the ring. And he looked fantastic. Like I said, he looked very composed, comfortable. Not once did he look like he was uncomfortable, like I've seen him in the past. You know, when he was against Robert the Ghost Guerrero, even with Rocky Juarez, you know, with the cut, he looked uncomfortable with the pressure. Celestino did try to apply pressure, but like I said, after receiving a couple overhand rights, he just kind of fell back and said, you know what, this guy's getting the best of me. My corner's not telling me anything. Jeff Mayweather had nothing to say to him, didn't seem to know how to adjust him correctly, and it was all Litzau's night that night. You know, he got to give it hands down. His trainer was giving him the perfect advice, you know, telling him, don't stay in there too long. Keep boxing, you know. And that was exactly what he needed to do against Caballero, you know. But let's move on to there.
It reminded me of remember Vivian Harris when he was calling out Floyd, and he was looking scary at 140. He was this 5'11 dude, you know, named Vivian, with power in both hands. He's kind of speedy. And it was kind of like, you know what, that guy could be a problem for Floyd if he moves himself into the position. And he was being very vocal. Then he fights Carlos Mousa on the same card as Floyd and gets knocked out. You know, and just completely, like, you know, throws way too many punches at the beginning of the fight, gets really tired and gets knocked out by Mousa. You know, who got outboxed by Ricky Hatton later on. It was the exact same kind of thing. It was his time to shine, and he didn't prepare. And that kind of segues into our second fight, because a lot of people, you know, kind of dog the matchup, and myself included, with Litzau. We're like, dude, you know, it's probably going to be a knockout. You know, it's a showcase fight for Celestino. And he didn't prepare. Now, on the flip side, Andre Berto did prepare. And some people thought that Freddie Hernandez had a little bit of a shot, not much, but it could take him some rounds. And if he landed that right hand on his chin, you know, it could change things, because those people are pretty, you know, down on Andre Berto and his chin. And Berto came out and knocked dude out very fast. it wasn't worth, you know, David Greishman from Boxing Scene pointed out, he landed 9 punches. He made $100,000 a punch, got paid $900,000 by HBO to do that.
Right.
But at the same time, he came and did his job. You know, maybe that's all he did, but he did it in spectacular fashion. And I don't really have that big of a problem with it if he's able to do that. I mean, I'm not crazy about the Al Heyman system and overpaying.
You know,
but still, knocked dude out in 9 punches. It's pretty impressive.
You know, I'm not with you on that one. I got to be honest. You know, 9 punches
right.
to take out a B-class fighter. To me, in all honesty, I was like, okay, so what? You could have done that on ESPN. Instead, we paid you $1.4 million to do it on HBO. Let's do it against somebody that was worthy of it. Let's do it against somebody that would have been a test. I think we all thought that he was
going to... I agree with that.
We all thought he was going to beat Hernandez, okay? He knocks him out. You know what? That's exactly what you're supposed to do. How am I going to applaud you for something you're supposed to do? We know you're supposed to do, and you did do it. You came through. I'll give you that. Berto, I'll give you that. You came through. But at the end of the day,
it proves nothing.
It proves exactly nothing. You know, it still leaves me the thought of, is there anything there that can tell me that you have a chance against Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather? I don't know. You know, that doesn't tell me a whole lot. There's no argument there. You can't use that, you know, as an underline to say, well, here, we got this because he did exactly this to, you know, Freddie Hernandez. You can't even use that. That's not even a reference there. It's kind of out the door, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. You kind of this is the thing I do blame him for is that, you know, I'm just strictly talking about the fight. That, you know, worst
right.
case scenario, he could have pulled a Caballero and screwed it up or gone rounds with Freddie Hernandez in a boring, you know, decision.
Oh, God, you know what? He's lucky he didn't do that because Boxing 360, who's the only vato to walk the yard in Twitter, would have went all over him. He would have shanked him numerous times, man, if he would have made that type of mistake, you know?
Yeah,
I thought Gabe, I got to say, Gabe, I thought you were the gangster of Twitter. That guy takes your title, man. He leaves you out the door looking inside, you know?
you know, I'll honestly say the difference between me and Boxing 360 is I talk this much shit, and then I actually go talk to these people in person.
Right.
I think that takes a lot more balls. But, you know, Tito's a friend of mine, and the man has got big ones. The man speaks his mind. I will give him that. And even when braced, you know, I God love him. But, you know, but I still have to go see these people in person.
Right.
So I still got the edge on him on that.
I don't. I just got to say, I just said one of the writers or something. I can be behind the scenes.
I've actually gotten tamer lately, yeah, and he's gotten worse. It's kind of funny. He's taking up my slack. I haven't been in a good Twitter war in a few weeks. I better go pick a fight after this to get my reputation back.
No, don't. But,
you know,
no.
With Berto, he put himself in this position. Yeah, no, I won't do that. He put himself in this position where – by turning down, you know, you look at Sergio Martinez, and everything was against him, and HBO pretty much forced the fight. I'm really on both fighters in a sense, but Martinez got the bad end of the stick. You know, I think he got paid like $1 million, and he landed 23 punches in his fight, and he got paid less than Berto per punch.
Exactly.
But he said to Lou Labella, no matter what they threw in front of him, make the fight, and I will knock him out. And when Berto was being offered less money, and the fight was going to be in Los Angeles or Vegas, and he didn't want that, and turned down the Mosley in the second negotiations, that I have a huge problem with. You just say, make the fight, and I will knock him out, be the first guy to do it, and then I'm in line for all the big paydays, and everybody is quiet. Instead, he's kind of, as the fighter, kind of helped create this situation. I don't blame him for having good management. It gets him a huge salary. I'd like to hire Al to be my agent. But, you know, I'd write less, you know, shorter articles and get more money. But you know, the thing is at some point you got to draw a line in the sand and say, yeah, it's prize fighting, not pride fighting. But every once in a while, you know what? It should be pride fighting. Maybe it should
exactly.
be both.
Exactly.
That's the problem I have.
You know,
he didn't take charge.
He's still a young kid. And you know what, Gable, he tweeted something out there too, and I completely agree because I was thinking about that, and you just hit it, you know, right what I was thinking. And it was funny because I looked at it and I was actually, you know, when you start talking to yourself and you kind of just, you know, revise it in, you know, out loud rather in yourself, you know, and I did that, you know, when I read you said everybody's at, you know, saying Mosley don't fight Pacquiao, but Berto fight Mosley, and it made no sense.
He's too shot to fight Pacquiao, but
he's
Berto
not too
has to
shot,
prove
right.
himself against Mosley. I'm like, huh?
That
I
makes
don't understand
no sense.
That makes,
yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. Not
made,
now.
Right.
That's the thing is that Berto missed that window when Shane was still thought of as a threat. He could have fought him, and he didn't. And even after he lost to Shane, he still kind of went or to Floyd. He still thought, okay, he could still fight Berto, and it's a bit of a test. And then we saw the Mora fight. Now, nobody really wants to see him. Although, you know, looking at it though, is that really fair? Because Mora and Floyd are completely defensive fighters. I mean, I would almost say that Mora's performance in that fight was like the black hole of boxing. It actually sucked all the boxing knowledge and air out of the room into his body because he didn't do anything the whole fight, and he still managed to get a draw. So he just stole our time and got a draw. So you look at that, though, and you look at Pacquiao against Shane and Berto against Shane. Yeah, they're faster and they move, but they're aggressive, offensive-minded fighters, and that's going to give – an old dude like Shane, if you come to him, he can hit you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you come to him all defensive like Floyd does, he's not going to hit you. But Manny's there for punches. He gets hit in his fights. Berto apparently has a bad chin. So if he does land that right, you know, he doesn't have great defense. I know that. It's not much of an inside game. You know, it's going to be a lot of clinching in that fight. I wonder if Shane has just enough to give them a problem. I don't know.
Huh. You know what? Let me patch in our other co-host, Ernesto Gavillon. What's up, Ernie?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Oh, man, you
know.
How much? You know.
We are
relaxing.
I'm restricted.
I'm restricted, Ernie, at work to talk boxing or to even, like, you know, check my Twitter or anything like that because they're doing a shutdown on us at work and they're depriving us of what we love most and stuff. So I got to sit there and kind of be in the dark with everything. I'm trying to catch up with everybody right now, and it just feels good to be able to talk boxing, man, with some of my favorite people in the whole wide world. Ernie. One of my favorite people in the whole wide world, Ernie. Hey, Hey, Gable, though, let me tell you this. Ernie's one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. But Vic Darchinian may have something to say about that. Because Vic is pissed at Ernie right now. Ernie was supposed to have Vic Darchinian's trunks, the pink with the, you know, light blue stripes and stuff that says here on the side. He didn't have them ready, you know. So, you know, Ernie's right now, he's in the doghouse with the Dark City champ and stuff.
I wouldn't say doghouse. In the end, he was very, you know, we're really actually pretty good friends. But, you know, initially when he called, I couldn't answer because I was at work. And when I finally did call, it was after I worked out, and that was around 9 o'clock, and he was a little upset, you know, you don't call me back, blah, blah, blah. And well, sorry, bro, but I have to work. And then I started giggling. He goes, this is no laughing matter. I was like, uh-oh. So eventually I worked it all out, and all his stuff was sent, and I confirmed with the guy that I usually send it to that they got most of the stuff, and the outfit was being finished up tonight. So it'll be sent out. Everything's copacetic in the land of Darchinian. I think one thing he did promise me, he said he's going to KO Abner Morris.
Whoa.
So, wow.
That's what he said.
Well,
he
you
said
know what, though? I think that's just part of his vocabulary. You know, like, you know, when he goes to a drive-thru and has to order something, they're all, sir, what do you want? I KO you. I will knock you out. Big Mac.
Yeah. The humble is not Vic Darchinian. Yeah, he's a very...
He walks around as
humble,
if he's
he thinks humble's a sandwich.
The way
yeah.
he walks, like he's 6'5". He struts with like the chest out, the arms out, like he's 6'5", like 250, you know.
But
and
he's a cool dude, though. That's the thing.
Oh,
that's
so cool. Yeah, he's
out.
Funny as hell.
You know what? I'll say this about Vic. I think I know him more between all of us here. And when you take away the layers of that aggressive, cocky nature that people perceive him to be, real good kid, real good guy, real loyal. He appreciates loyalty back. He'll give you the shirt off his back if that's what you need. And you know, he's a good guy. He's just a really humble, pretty down to earth guy. It's just that, you know, he's got a way about him. I think he invented swagger before P. Diddy did. I mean,
yeah, he really did.
He does. He's just got a swagger about him, and either you really appreciate it and dig it, or you hate it. And you know, there's no middle ground with Vic. I'll say that.
The thing with him is he fights, man. You know, he has that swagger, but he backs it up in the ring, and whether he loses or wins, he brings it. And
He has a resume that stands the test of time, I would think, too. He's never backed down from anybody. You know, I bet you he'd probably be the first one to sign up to this Bantamweight tournament. You know, I bet you he was the first one to say, yeah, I'll do it. I don't care if it's 118, I'll do it. You know, that's just the nature he is. And you know, all the stuff that he had when he was younger, the Burgos comments he made and stuff like that, I think it was youth and inexperience in the spotlight. And, you know, now that he's got the spotlight, if you notice, he's toned it down. He's still cocky and still self-assured of himself. But I think the trash talking that he's done with other opponents and in the manner that he's gone, I think it's toned down a little bit. He's just assured of himself now. And I appreciate this version of Vic. I'm not sure he wins.
Let's call another really self-assured guy, Jason Litzau. Let's see what he's got to say. And congratulate him on his great performance that happened this Saturday night on the HBO card.
I always feel like we're on that Crank Yanker show when we fall.
Hello?
Hello, is Jason in?
Yeah, that's good.
Hey, Jason, what's up, brother? This is Dave Duenas with Leave It in the Ring Radio. You're live with us right now.
Okay.
How you doing, man?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. Let me ask you, brother, are you departing, man? Are you done celebrating that win over Celestino Caballero?
I know you're celebrating.
Right on. Hey.
I'm not even lying to you.
You haven't celebrated
yet? I got three daughters. I got three daughters, and I didn't do nothing after the fight, and I haven't done nothing since. But I'm eventually going to take my kids somewhere, and that's how I celebrate.
Right on, man. Well, there you go. You can celebrate regardless and stuff. You know, first off, brother, we want to congratulate you. It was by far your best performance and what you did against a guy that was considered the most feared man in the lower weights. I mean, all three of us here, I got my co-host Gabriel Montoya and Ernesto Gavillon. You left us at awe. I mean, that performance was stellar. There was no way.
No, I didn't. Quit lying.
Oh, man.
You guys all picked me. Don't lie.
You know, let me ask you.
You're lying now. Don't lie on the air.
Hey, I'm not lying to you, brother. Let me, Jason, ask you this, okay? When did you when did you realize that he was afraid to trade with you? Because, you know, watching the fight, and I don't know if you were able to watch it replay and all, if you took the time to do that, you could literally see Celestino shut down. Like, he did not want to throw at you. He was afraid to see
I know. I hear you. And I had a lot in the tank at the end of the fight because I was waiting for something like that. I'm going, he's buying, he's ready to fight one of these times about to go at it, you know. But, I'm just thankful that the judges didn't rob me, but I expected a lot more, and I could have been because of my sparring partners were so big and strong. I had a 6'1" welterweight sparring me, so they're like even bigger and better than Celestino or whatever his name is. I don't know how to say his name.
You got it. That's how you say it, Celestino.
Celestino, yeah. You know, I had great sparring, so I was expecting, like, you know, that's what's so beautiful, setting your expectations so high for somebody and then not being near as good as you think they are, you know. And so it was easier and easier. Like, I just couldn't believe it. But I never got overconfident. Focus, something I've never done in my life.
You know, let's talk about that for a moment here, Jason, because, you know, when you came out into the scene, you were a fighter that wanted to be exciting. You were a guy that wanted to, you know, be just explosive all the time. But now, you know, b- being married and having the kids, it really looks like you've kind of turned the tables on yourself. You've settled down. You've shown maturity in the ring. Is that a big part, having a family, is that the big part of it, of why you've settled
Absolutely.
Down?
Absolutely. It's about, you know, from when I was crazy and wild, fighting wild like that is because I was so unhappy with going through issues with my first daughter's mother. And I was hating life, and now I got a great wife, and I got a great daughter that lives with me all the time. So it made me want to be a smarter fighter, not to die. You know, I don't really want to die no more.
Right.
So I got to be smarter about it, you know. And I want to be able to push my kid down the slide, you know. So I'm just being a smarter fighter because of that reason.
Did you feel like, you know, when you went all the way with him, okay, 12, you know, you went to 10 rounds, and when they're reading out the scorecards, did you feel that you had it? I mean, because obviously you were going up against the HBO fighter, right?
You know what? It doesn't matter to me. I got faith. I got faith, and I know no matter what happens, there's a plan for me. And even if I didn't get that decision that night, I know there's a plan for me, and I'm a big believer so in the Lord. So I don't, that really don't upset me, but I'm just happy everything came out the way it did, and I'm thankful for it, and I don't take it for granted by any means, because the one judge almost did cheat me.
The only reason I'm asking you that, Jason, is because immediately after you won, it didn't seem like HBO was too happy that you won that over, you know, Caballero. I mean, you know, Larry Merchant saying thumbs down on your performance. It didn't seem like they wanted to give you your due at all.
No, they didn't. They didn't, because you know why that is as us men are in life, we don't want to be wrong, and that proved everybody wrong that night. And that's what the real reason is. When a man's wrong, it's hard to step over and say, man, well, was I wrong? A man can never admit that. And that's what happened that night. Everybody had to admit they were wrong, you know?
Yeah, everybody did. Even the people that were putting on the bets there. The betting odds was really, really high. It was ridiculous, and you know,
and that's beautiful because everybody that loves me had my back, bet on me. My cousin, my brother, my manager, all bet on me.
Yeah, they made a good killing, I bet. You know, I'm gonna pass to my co-host Gabriel. Go ahead, brother.
I'm just curious, you know. Jason, coming into the fight, I'm sure you knew that this fighter was known to throw a lot of punches, was a volume pressure guy. Were you surprised that he wasn't throwing any punches? And did you think,
no.
like, maybe he...
Everybody no? has to understand, it's not that. It's not that. I didn't let him throw punches. I wasn't there to be hit. Everybody needs to really understand and give credit what credit is due instead of making excuses. He was expecting me to be there, and I was a whole different fighter that night. When you prepare
yeah.
for a different fighter, then what happens? You get shell-shocked. You're like, what the hell is going on here, coach?
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
you
think
know?
He was expecting you to go, Jason. He wasn't
exactly.
expecting to do
Correct.
Jason.
Correct. Nobody knows who I could be but my manager. My manager said it best. I knew you could beat him if you fought the way I know you could. And he's my trainer. So, I mean, he's seen me in the gym time after time what I can do. But I never did. I was always wanting to please the fans and make wars. But now, you know, I just got to be victorious, and that's all that matters. I got kids, and I need to be able to push them in the slide. I can't. I will go to war if I have to. But I need to be smarter, and I can be a smart fighter, what you guys all seen.
Yeah. So do you think this change is something that happened, really began in your last fight? And we're now just kind of seeing it because of how clearly you won this fight?
No, it changed. My daughter that was born is what changed it all. She's 1 year old. She's 12. She's 13 months today. So that's when my life changed.
Nice.
When nobody understands me in my life, and I never told nobody, and I really don't care to tell nobody, because as long as God knows, you know, that's all that matters to me. But I went through a lot of bad, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars fighting for my first two kids. And beyond anybody will ever know, one day I'll write a book and you'll understand. You know, but hey.
Where do you think you go from here?
I'm very good. Where do I go from here?
Have they told you about maybe a title shot or another HBO date?
You know, we all, you guys all know boxing. To be honest with you, I want to fight them all. I would love world champions. I want them all. I will be ready to fight. Calcino or Feliciano or whatever, you know, Cabriello. Nobody wanted to fight him. Let me tell you guys something. We're willing to fight him at 126 pounds. Let me tell you. Nobody was willing to give me a little bit more money to make 126, so we found the 130. Hmm. I took less money than anybody else was offered. And you know what? God is good. And beer is great. And Jason is crazy. And you know what? That's the dead truth. I got half of what everybody else was offered. But you know what? My hard work and dedication paid off, and I'm blessed, and I'm thankful, and I'm just very thankful, and I'm not taking this moment for granted.
Jace, let me ask you this, because at 130, you still look a lot bigger and thicker than Celestino Caballero. Can you move up? Is that any plans you guys have right now? Are you planning to move up?
I can do it all.
You can do it all.
I can do it all. Right now, I'm being a stay-at-home mom. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm not lying to you when I'm telling you that.
I can
do it all. I'm at the same time, I'm the maintenance man around here, too. Shovel, weed whack, I do it all. I take the garbage out, and I'm a stay-at-home mom. So, I mean, I can't tell you. You know, it's funny, but it's not. I do it all.
Absolutely. Let me pass it up really quick to my other co-host, Ernie Gabillon. Ernie, you got any questions for Jason?
Oh, hey, Jason. This is Ernie. You know, after the fight, we saw Caballero make excuse after excuse as to what happened and stuff like that. Is a rematch something that you would pursue simply just to shut him up and show that you are indeed the better fighter than, you know?
Come on, guys. Excuses are like assholes. Everybody got
one. Exactly.
You know, and you know what? Are you serious, guys? Honestly, I would fight him tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Right.
You
want
to fight? Come on down. Come on down. I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. Have him take a sleigh ride over here and I'll fight him. You're about to be Santa Claus time. I'll give him a Christmas present.
You know, Jace, I got a question here for you, because I've heard that this has haunted you for some time, that it's actually gotten underneath your skin because you have felt, you know what, I wasn't prepared for it. It wasn't me. I heard that you've been hunting for a rematch with Robert the Ghost Guerrero, who's at 135. Is that a fight still that you like?
I'll fight anybody, but I'm not hunting for nothing, because I leave that to my management for more. I don't really go out to call anybody out. If it's Cabriello, if it's anybody, but I'm not near the fighter that I am today. I don't got excuses. Robert Guerrero beat me. Jose Hernandez beat me. But let me tell you, I'm every day I live, I'm 27 now. When I'm 28, I'm going to be better. When I'm 29, I'm going to be better. When I'm 30, I'm going to be better. Somewhere in the 30s, I will go down the hill, and then I will retire. I won't stay in the game too long.
Absolutely.
But I'm going to tell you guys something, everybody. I'm a late bloomer. I didn't go through puberty till I was a junior in high school. Let me tell you something. I didn't go through puberty till 27 in boxing. So
when I graduated
from boxing.
Jason, yeah. In what ways are you better now as opposed to when you were younger?
Black and white's a
yeah, black and white. I don't want to get into your puberty. Your puberty was a little bit TMI for me.
I was gonna put my wife on the phone for that one. how am I better? I don't know if you guys realize, but when you're young and dumb, they say, right?
Right.
And only fools rush in. Well, there's my early part of my career.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Just now that I'm smarter and wiser, kind of like Einstein, I use my brain. I never realized I had a brain. I was like, holy moly, what the hell's going on here?
Absolutely. Hey, we saw it. And we saw you use the brain. Yeah, Saturday
night. Well, that's what's better. I used my brain. I didn't run in like a fool, rushing in with my head down.
Absolutely, brother. Well, you know, Jace, I just
know that you guys are my true fans, and you guys bet the house on you're retired now, right?
Exactly.
Right?
I'm actually sitting on a pile of money right now.
Right.
Well, Gabe only has $3.68 in his bank account right now.
Bank account? You're giving me too much credit.
Times that by 13, he's sitting pretty.
Yeah.
He's got groceries for the week.
Hey, Jason, we got a fan that wants to congratulate you. Is that okay? Can we patch in a fan right now for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Laz, go ahead, brother. You got, Jason,
hey,
Mitchell, the American
Jason.
Dream.
What's up, guys? Great show, guys. Jason, I just wanted to congratulate you, man. I told everybody to watch this fight, and particularly your fight instead of the other fight, because I thought you were going to win it, because you got a lot of heart, you got a lot of dedication. I got home at 5 in the morning from work. I saw the fight. I didn't even bother watching the other fights. I called the manager, and I put a story up on the internet about your victory. And I'm so happy for you, man. You got a lot of heart. You got a lot of dedication. And I feel you're going to do well between 126 and 135, anywhere in there. You're going to do well. You got a lot of heart, a lot of dedication. I wish you the best, man.
I really appreciate that, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I had one quick question. Did you comment anything to Larry Merchant at the end? Was there a brief comment? Do you remember what you said to him or you don't?
You know, to be honest with you, I almost could hear it on the TV when it replayed. But I almost 100% what I said is just, I wasn't trying to be arrogant. Like, how I showed you. I was literally just saying, thank you guys for this opportunity because I was so thankful that I had this opportunity.
It was heat of the moment. You're like thanking from the opportunity. Cool.
Right. I think that he thinks of it. I don't even know if he was booing me or what, but I really don't give a damn. That doesn't even bother me. What if he was booing me or if he was booing his girlfriend? I was really just thankful, and that's up to him if he wants to boo me or whatever he wanted to do that night.
Absolutely. You know what? And there was no way of booing you. There was no way of doing anything because, you know, you stole that moment on the Saturday night on HBO, Jason. And we obviously wanted to congratulate you. That's why we asked you to be on Leaving in the Ring. And it was great having you on, brother. We just want to hopefully, wish you continuing winning victories and continuing to supporting your family and doing what you do in the ring, brother. It was great having you on.
Well, that's exactly what it was, is that I was barely looking at a fight that was after Rocky to barely feed my kids. So when HBO gave me just half what they're offering other people, I was like, you know what? Give me that. I'll take it for half, and I'm going to beat this guy. This was, in my heart, I really thought he would have retired if I lost this fight, because there's no way I'm going to fight for Mickey D's prices.
Absolutely, man. And hopefully this next time around, you get exactly what you're asking for. Jason Litzell right here, the American boy. I don't know. Maybe we should change it to the American Dream is on with us on Leaving the Ring. Hey, brother, again, thank you for speaking to us, bro, and wish you a good night and everything else.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, that name's already taken, the American Dream. That name's already taken because – that's for all the women back home. I'm the American Dream.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. the All-American boy, Jason Mitzel. Hey, brother, thank you again, man, for calling in.
Oh, hey, and then I remember I'm married. I'm with the same girl every night.
All right, brother. All right, take it easy.
Have a good
one. You too, brother. You take it easy. Oh, funny. Man. He is funny. You know, I mean, he's
funny
got a
guy.
Good sense of humor. He's got a good sense of humor, you know. Too bad Ernie don't got a sense of humor like that.
Because you don't tickle me anymore.
Wow, it's really hot in here.
Well, we had Jason Lissa, the American boy, on with Leaving the Ring. So if you guys missed that, you can catch it after the show is completed. Listen to what he's got to say. You know, I can't say, yeah, can't say enough, man. And how you know how you know. I guess you know it was due for him. You know, for this fight here.
It's a great story.
It is.
Yeah,
you know, it's a boxing, great. It's a man. Nice. Yeah, this is a nice, you know, reclamation project that you know, boxing's known for. And it's nice to see that, honestly, you know, I got to be honest, and, you know, I don't want to pull any punches. I still fear for him. He still sounds a little different than what I remember him sounding like 4 years ago when he was fighting the Hernandez and the Guerreros of the world. You know, so I hope that when he gets a chance to make his mark, get his payday and move on, he does so. You know, he's on that cusp, it seems like. And I just want to see nothing but success for this kid because, you know, he's one of those kids that gives it all. You know, we've all seen the Guerrero fight. We've all seen the Hernandez fight. We've seen the Juarez fights. And he gives it 100% regardless of whether he's in shape, whether he's focused or not. So I do hope in the end that you know, he has enough of his faculties when he leaves the game to you know, cherish the family that he has now.
Yeah,
you know.
That's the thing. You know, it's just, I'm with you, Ernie. I do worry about him. You know, he's talking about fighting into his 30s, and I'm like, dude, you know, you may want to take a few more. The people around him realize they can move him to a position where he makes some good money.
Yeah.
Maybe pick up a title and get him out of the game, you know.
He was promoterless for this fight, wasn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because and that doesn't bode well for him. I hope that someone at least picks up an option on him and gives him a shot at you know. I was telling someone on Boxing Scene's board that I think right now the best he can do is 50-50 parity on a rematch with Caballero. You know, and if that means that, you know, Caballero got 200 and he got 50, split that 250 down the middle at 125, you know, and well, make a nice little, you know, some out of it, you know, and you know, hopefully he wins that one and then parlays it into a championship fight, gets a nice little payday. And, you know, because in the end, you know, while this is an entertaining sport and sport we love, it's also a business, and these guys have to look out for their business, you know, aspects of this and, you know, taking care of their family. And with Jason, you know, he's on a high. He's riding the crest of a wave, and I hope he can benefit from it because, you know, so few fighters get to really ever do that.
You know, this, I want to kick in a little bit in with the HBO crew, Larry Merchant, and, you know, what was going on with them that night on Saturday night?
Well, what I understand,
they were bitter.
The thumbs down wasn't about Jason. So then Davila had asked him what he thought of the scores or what he thought of Caballero or if he, you know, he thought the decision was fair. And Larry went to Lou, not to Jason, with the thumbs down. It's just that Jason went over there at the same time that Lou was asking, and they did the thumbs down. So the impression was that Larry
That interview with Casitas was just poor. I don't know whether if he was really I don't know if he maybe worded wrong when he goes, "How would your brother have felt about this performance?" I mean, that was...
Or would your brother be proud of you? Is what he asked.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that was just terrible, bro. You know what I mean? It was like, he had just got stopped, you know?
I didn't have that big a problem with it. It's a tough question to ask.
Yeah, it had to be asked.
And it was kind of part of the thing. And even actually before, I know Steve interviewed him, and they had asked, he didn't really want to talk about the brother.
Yeah.
Imagine HBO has a protocol of what to ask, what not to. And Larry, I thought, was off that night. He seemed to me like a guy that knew his job is kind of done. they're really pushing Max now for the big shows, and Larry, he got this big show, but was also kind of saddled with watching Andre Berto, who a lot of us have a problem, you know, with Al Heyman, this guy making all this money to beat a guy. He liked, I think, from what I understood at the press conference, he actually talked to Jason and gave him some nice words of encouragement, and was very happy about the win, according to a few people I knew that were there. But to me, it was like he just was kind of just off the cuff like all night long, more so than he normally is. But I didn't have a big problem with the interview. It was a tough question. He maybe could have asked it in a better way, worded it different. But to me, I took it as him kind of prompting him to say, you know, that, yeah, my brother would be proud, or I did give a good job. I mean, maybe he should have said, rather than ask a question, he maybe should have said a statement and said, I think your brother would have been proud of you. But shit, man, I've asked some pretty dumbass questions or worded some questions wrong. Okay, so
hey, I mean,
I actually
like
asked Oscar the other day, in Tom Hauser's piece, there was somebody that said that Sergio Martinez fights better and is better looking than Oscar, and I asked him, you know, how do you respond to that comment? And not about the fights better, but the better looking part. And Oscar just said, good for him. So, you know, we all ask dumb questions.
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, I guess so, you know, I mean, even on our film crew was out there at the workout for Ortiz and Khan, and, you know, Eric Aguilera goes, hey, you know, is there any truth to Shane Mosley walking away? And if so, what are your thoughts? You could just see the change of face in Oscar De La Hoya's face. And he's like, he's got to do what he's got to do. I wish Mosley the best of luck. And he walked right off. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a touchy subject and stuff. But really quick.
Oh, dude, I asked him about it too. Yeah, he was not. Oscar has a specific body language. When he's selling you something or telling you something that he believes, he will look you in the eye. When he doesn't want to answer a question, he is looking
he
anywhere but you.
Yeah, exactly.
He stayed with
me,
but he looked away, you know, and
it's this
also
time,
true, though, you know, the going back to the Larry thing and asking hard questions, sometimes it's about the questions you don't ask. And I wasn't around when Oscar was talking about Manny Pacquiao weight drains all of his foes and said, well, he got me on the scales at 147 and named off the other fights. And nobody, if I'd have been there, I would have brought it up. I was interviewing somebody else when they were doing the roundtable with him, but nobody asked him, hey, wait a minute, didn't you ask for 147?
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't you ask for that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's your problem, that you couldn't make it. Not Manny's problem. He just smiled and said, cool. And so sometimes it's, you know, I'd rather have Larry every once in a while ask a bad question than a bunch of reporters that don't ask the right questions.
You know, that's one thing, too. That's one thing, too, that, you know, I do want to talk about. We've gotten tons of email at leavinginthering@gmail.com about the whole weight issue and stuff. And a lot of ways, you know, we do put a lot on Manny Pacquiao, and we do point the finger at Manny at certain situations. But you got to look at certain things. And, you know, I'm going to patch in some fight fans that have been holding on hold for a minute. The phone lines are open, 347-215-7598. Leaving the ring with your host, Dave Duenas, and your other host, Gabriel Montoya, and Ernesto Gabillon. Really quick, though, before we kind of move on and I forget about, we have Smith, who helped out Jason Litzau for the Caballero fight. He's out of Vegas. What's up, brother?
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I didn't actually help him out with the Caballero fight. It was a couple years ago. I just always admired Jason Litzau's style and, you know, his work ethic in the gym. You know,
okay.
We fight the same weight class at 130 pounds. So, you know, when I seen that fight come around, you know, I seen Caballero in the gym. I know what Jason used to do in the gym, and, you know, I just always thought Jason was going to get that fight, and I couldn't believe that he was an underdog like he was. I'm glad he was an underdog because it made my pocket a little bit better that night, and, you know, it was just a good win for Jason. I couldn't believe that they're saying that maybe a rematch would do Caballero any good. I think it would only...
I don't think so. I think in in retro of what Caballero, we've seen in him, which we all, you know, were kind of in sync about it, is that he has a very amateur style. He slaps with his punches.
Right.
It's just surprising that he hasn't corrected that, you know what I mean? In the time frame that he's been pro, you know, where Jeff Mayweather has not corrected that at all, hasn't taken the time to straighten them out, to have them turn correct. Even his footwork. I mean, Gable,
that was terrible.
His footwork was terrible, you know?
He was kind of a raw dude before, and his main thing was he throws a lot of punches, and he can hit you from sitting on his stool in the other corner. But in this fight, he looked listless. He looked game planless, if that's a word. You know, he just looked not ready to fight. And a lot
I think a lot of people missed all that in his last couple fights. He fought the same he did that night as he did all his career. And I think that night was the night where somebody actually executed the right game plan. I believe Caballero was overrated.
I know, guys, in his camp, though, and he actually, the reason the weight kept changing, and you came in over the weight, is because they didn't take Jason seriously at all. And he didn't train well, and he had to kill himself to make weight. I mean, he's always much more active than that. He looked, to me, listless. And there was moments where he started to come on but didn't have the energy to sustain it. And I thought Jason fought a great fight.
Yep.
But I think if they were really game planning for Caballero, they were game planning for a guy that threw a lot of punches. And Jason did some things to take, you know, not make it easy on Caballero, but
right.
I think it was kind of he split the difference. One guy wasn't prepared, and one guy was fighting the fight of his life.
Yeah, because, I mean, because if you're saying that it's the same fighter, I disagree, because I thought the Dwight Yard fight, I thought he was excellent in that fight.
Right.
You know, I thought he was throwing a ton of punches. He was very active.
Exactly.
I agree, and I give credit to Jason for taking away a lot of what Caballero was doing at the same time. That looked like a very poor version of what we have seen a couple times with Caballero.
Caballero,
he's from another generation of fighters, an older generation of fighters, I would say. Jason's part of the new crew, the new breed. And, you know, I'm just glad to see another new breed get their chance and opportunity and actually capitalize on it. A lot of the other ones, you know, they get their chance, but then all of a sudden you get a knockout, and it's them on the ground and not the other person. And I was just glad to see another new breed get their chance, and I'm waiting for my own chance at 130 pounds to eliminate another old foe.
Absolutely. You know, hey, let me ask you, what's your first name?
My name is Lightning Lonnie Smith. They call me El Negro Mexicano.
Oh, Lightning Lonnie
Smith,
man?
130 pounds on Twitter.
Yeah. 100. Okay,
oh, yeah.
I know who you are. Yeah, exactly. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I logged on to my BlackBerry and everything, and I seen, you know, the Living in the Ring. You know, I'm a follower, and I guess I missed it by a couple minutes.
Yeah. You know, hey, I watched a couple of your fights and stuff. When's the next fight happening? Or are you still having problems getting anybody in the ring with you at the moment?
I'm having problems with promoters, actually. You know, they have people signed, and they want me to fight these guys on their card. I mean, that's a big chance for you to take. But when you go out of town, you know, you got new judges, you got things like that. And, you know, I learned now that I can't knock everybody out. I knock out a lot, but I can't knock out everybody.
Right, you know.
I got my fingers crossed for a card at the end of January, or actually January 7th here at the Cox Pavilion, but we're going back and forth, and it's not looking too good for that card.
No, it's not looking that great, huh? But you're staying busy, though, in the gym.
Oh, yeah. I never leave the gym. I'm a gym rat. I'm here at L.A. Boxing and Anthem, training some people right now myself, training them, and then I train myself in the morning. I'm getting ready to start sparring and training camp with Devin Alexander the Great. I think he's one of the best fighters there is, and he's got me being his sparring partner, so I'm excited about that.
How's he looking?
I haven't been in the gym with him yet. He hasn't came down yet, but I'm actually going to put my money on him.
when do you head out for sparring at the end of the week?
No, he's actually coming here. He's coming here to Las Vegas. So as soon as they give me a call, they said I'm in there.
Well, you have to give us a call, man, and you have to give us an update on how things are going over there.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll tell him to call y'all, and, you know, y'all can do an interview with him for sure. But he's definitely the next new breed out of all these younger guys like myself that's going to be a champion for a long time. So, I love Timothy Bradley. I fight similar to his style. You know, I'm trying to get my style a little bit closer to Timothy Bradley, but I just think Devin Alexander is going to get him this time.
Hey, Lonnie,
I'm picking Bradley myself.
Me too. Bolan, let me ask you this, brother. How do you mimic a Timothy Bradley? I mean, you know, Timothy's got that big old head, and that's going to be a factor in that fight.
Absolutely.
Do you put on, like, triple headgear? I mean, I don't know. How is Alexander going to be able to be comfortable with a big dome in front of him?
Well, myself, I don't have a head like that or anything, but I have a fighting style that's similar to him where I throw a lot of punches, you know. All my fights, I don't stop punching. I feel like, you know, while you're in there, 3 minutes, it's only 3 minutes, so let's go to war, you know. And I'm training with Skipper Kelp now, and he's trying to show me how to be a little bit more defensive. So, you know, maybe I'll put that into my regimen.
There you go, brother. Well, hey, man, thanks for calling in and, telling us a little bit about Jason and talking about, you going, hopefully, you know, when he shows up, you're going to be getting in or helping out Devon, the great Alexander, brother.
And just tell Jason, I said, man, great job. And, you know, lots of love from Las Vegas.
Absolutely, brother. Will do, man. You take care, brother.
Appreciate
Tim, if you're listening out there, the comments of Dave Duenas are his and his alone. We do not believe it in the ring radio. We do not believe you have a big head.
Hey, Timothy, you know you're my boy. And you even said you got a big old head, okay? You know that, man.
he has a large head. That's all right.
He does. He's got a big old head, man. I mean, you know, it's a helmet.
He can still pick all of our hands.
Shoot, if it was normal size, he'd be at 130 right now.
There you cross the line there with that one there, buddy. I think it's safe to say that in Halloween, if Timothy wanted to paint like if he had a football helmet on his head, it would look believable. You know? I know. But
wow.
Hey, you know, Timothy, you know we love you over here, man. We think you're one of the best at 140 and stuff, but
Tim, just so you know, that neither of those jokes were mine.
Actually, Timothy, Gabriel is over texting me the jokes and stuff because we all know I am not that funny. I'm just not that creative.
This I can attest to.
All right, let's move on. Let's go right into what possibly could be the fight of the year. A lot of fight fans were very, very, vocal about this and went nuts. Michael Casillas and Juanma Marquez, they went at it, you know, in the ring. Marquez getting dropped early in the rounds, coming back to just show how precise and how much this guy is a professor in the ring. Who's washing dishes in the background?
I am.
Are you?
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, my. You know what? I got a bunch of dishes I need washed over here, Ernie.
Are you wearing an apron right now?
No. Not yet.
Are you wearing Vic D'Artagnan's pink trunks right now?
Well, let me put you this way. I'm the best cook in the house, so. By far, I'm the best cook in the house. So.
Is that
I'm
right?
I'm actually eating your food.
Yeah.
It's actually quite the cook.
Thank you.
Why I've eaten food. Yeah.
So, and my kids got to eat, so I'm on the radio show and cooking. Is it too loud, though?
Yeah, we can hear everything.
Okay, I'm going to mute it.
Does Vic's trunks have the little, like, lowrider dingle balls on them?
Who,
Vic?
I really hope they, yeah. What are the trunks
like? No, but I will say this. We did make custom gloves for him.
Oh, did you?
Nice.
We made custom black and red gloves. Well, he's going to debut them on the 11th. They're actually pretty. It's a nice color scheme, to be honest.
Hey, send a picture out and all that, so we all see them before they get sent out and stuff. So, anyways, going back to Marquez, great performance off of Marquez, but I'm still saying, you know what? I'm not convinced he's going to, you know, be able to give Manny Pacquiao a run. Maybe at 140, yes. But at 147, no. I don't want to.
No. That's the thing. You asked earlier about Berto. You know, like, why I'm still not convinced he's the right fight. And to me, I look at Manny's last opponents. Yes, I know I picked Margarito, but here's the thing. It's not like I'm talking out both sides of my mouth. I'm talking out both sides at the end of the fight. You know, you make all your guesses, and you look in the camps and all that stuff, and then you make a pick, and just because you're wrong, it doesn't mean that anything you say after is going against that. It just means you have new evidence now, which is the fight itself. And you look at that fight and all the other ones preceding it, really, up till David Diaz, and Manny's been fighting guys that are not tailor-made, but that bring out the best in his style. And some of them have been in his pathway.
Right,
yeah,
to his advantages, you know what I mean? And that goes back.
Not to his advantage in any way, shape, or form. He's a big dude. He's got bad defense, maybe a questionable chin, not all that much experience, but he's big. He's bigger. He's
and not fast on his feet.
Fast enough. He's got good power. He's explosive. He's not fast. I would say maybe he's probably faster on his feet than maybe Marquez might be at 147.
Yeah, I would say yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
So,
you know?
I mean, I just think it's that to me is the fight. Or against the winner of Bradley. I think the 140-pounders need to sort themselves out. You know, they all need to fight each other. Freddie Roach told me the other day, you know, Maidana and Khan are the two best 140-pounders in the world. And I said, there's no way you can say that. They haven't fought Alexander and Bradley.
Yeah, I think that's ridiculous. When I heard those. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's so out of left field for anybody to say that when they haven't even proven yet, you know, where you can make an argument that Bradley is the best at 140 because his consistency, what he's been doing at 140 and stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
his body of work speaks for itself. I think
exactly.
That was exactly my argument to him. It's like he went through tougher guys. But at the same time, I think out of all the 140-pounders, Amir Khan has the potential to be the best one because I think
he has
the body to be a welterweight. You know,
he
he's
does,
the fastest out of all of them. He's ridiculous.
If you were to
fast.
If you were to sit there and look at the current crops of 140-pound fighters, I would say Khan and maybe Vic Ortiz have something enough, an extra gear to call them maybe down the line. Whereas I think Tim and Devin and guys like Lamont Peterson can be merely just really, really good to just good.
You know, the thing I'm looking at, Ernie, is that if anything, you know, Freddie's going to want to hold off a Khan and Bradley fight, or even an Alexander, wait till Khan gets just better. I mean, to me right now, he hasn't even hit his peak yet.
Nope,
that kid has not hit his peak at all yet. And you know, it's going to be a scary thing when he does hit that peak. Victor Ortiz.
I think they prefer those fights at welterweight. Sorry, go ahead, Victor Ortiz.
No. No, what I was going to say, you know, them saying that Miadana, if Khan beats him in great fashion, let's say he even stops him, I think that's what they're going off is saying that he's the best at 140. But my argument with that one there is that, okay, well, Miadana's a good contender, and he actually exposed what Victor was at the moment. He wasn't a champion caliber fighter yet. You know, he was just another good contender. And he stopped a durable contender, and that continues making Miadana a valuable contender to really upset or possibly grow. I don't see him growing in it. I see him staying stag and staying at the point of just him being a good contender.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, actually, I want to jump back because we keep jumping over him. Juan Manuel Marquez, because this is arguably, you know, a fight of the year candidate. And, you know, going in, I switched on this show. I picked Katsidis late. It looked like he was going to get him early. He dropped him with that left hook. I thought that was as good a Michael Katsidis as I've seen. He was competitive all the way, I think, to round 7 or 8. But Marquez, man, it's like he just kept going to the ropes, using Katsidis' aggression against him and ripping him to the body with good shots. And then occasionally upstairs. I don't know about you guys. I was surprised as hell when I saw him kind of start boxing again in round 9 and just finish the deal.
I predicted the round, sucker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's incorrect.
That's true. Yeah.
No, I just knew eventually. It's like I said, I think last week when we did the Thanksgiving show, I think the traps were there for Juan to use. And he did. He found it's one of those things. It's one of those things where we're really good inside, you know, really good. I'll be a little bit prejudiced. I said really good Mexican inside fighters find avenues by using, looking at what they have in front of them and seeing the alleyways that that someone's guard presents. And Juan Manuel, Jose Luis Castillo were the two best I've ever seen do that. I mean, they can just look at a fighter and say, okay, right down the middle is where I got you. And if you notice, there was a sequence of uppercuts that Juan threw that were just flush and beautiful and timed and just, it was art. I mean, to me, watching Juan Manuel Marquez is artwork. It's just, it really is.
It is. That uppercut
is.
From a distance, from the rear or from the front, he just, and just catching you just underneath the nose, you know,
yep.
So it just jacks you up completely. And it's just effortless, just sweeps up, boom, there you go, take that with you. And then he dances away, and it's just, it's absolute artwork. He's a beautiful, all the Saracen fighters are like that. They're just beautiful to watch.
Yeah, and something that you know, people were kind of bringing up around as far as discussions were concerned was that this is the same version that fought Mayweather in September. And I disagree wholeheartedly because what you saw this past Saturday versus the guy who fought in September of, what was it, 2009?
Yeah.
Vastly different because the guy couldn't maneuver as well as what we saw this past, you know, Saturday. I mean, the guy was setting traps. He was moving well. He was basically picking apart Katsidas. And now, granted, Katsidas is no Mayweather, but you could see the physical attributes that Mayweather that Marquez brings into the ring at 135 that he couldn't bring into the ring when he faced Mayweather.
He could afford to let you hit him a little bit and
wear
yourself out. He can't do that with Floyd.
Yeah,
somebody
exactly.
that big, any welterweight.
Well, the difference is the difference there is that Floyd was never there to be hit, where Casillas was. I mean, you know, I completely agree. You know, Marquez has a thing of beauty when he throws combinations. But let's go back to it, and let's remember, you know, Casillas squares up when he had a trap. He traps himself, you know, and that's what Marquez needs, is a guy that basically makes the mistakes for him to capitalize. With Floyd doesn't square up. Floyd stays at that boxing stance, and he pot shots, and he makes sure that he's not going to be there for that counter. Marquez needs you to be there for that counter just because the fact that his feet are a lot slower the older he has become.
Yeah. You know, to me, I still look at a guy that he's a veteran and he's getting by on now pure intelligence and his skill, but he can't really overmatch anybody. He can't barrel over anybody. He needs a style like Katsidas to kind of come to him. At 140, against any of the 140-pounders, I think he'd be outgunned. He might be able to outsmart maybe Devin Alexander, who I don't think is, I'm not calling him dumb, but his boxing IQ is not up to
the Marquez. Yeah, don't do that,
because
we'll get Kevin Cunningham on.
Yeah, you know, I think Kevin Cunningham is definitely as intelligent as Nacho Berrastain. He's a really smart trainer.
Right.
You know, and maybe
agree.
That's all you need. But you know, like I think Bradley would beat up Marquez on the inside and be just intelligent enough to win. Khan, I think, would just be way too fast for him, way too big. And Ortiz, I think, you know, that's a toss-up in terms of intelligence. But cause I think
speed
Marquez
would be a factor for that one. Yeah,
the speed
you know.
And the size, though, and the power would be a problem.
Yeah.
People thinking that he's going to take on Manny Pacquiao above 135.
The only way
successful are fooling themselves.
The only way I would want to see a Marquez and Manny Pacquiao at 140 is if Marquez was to fight the winner of the Alexander and Bradley, and allow them to get the pick, but at 140, you know, Bradley or Marquez to go up to 147. My whole thing is this, and you know, this is my way of responding back to a lot of emails about the whole Manny Pacquiao thing. Is that, listen, my whole thing about Manny is, when's the last time when we've seen it in equal grounds? When's the last time we've seen no advantages completely Wayne on Manny Pacquiao's corner? I mean, let's be fair now. You know what I mean? Enough is enough. You know what? If he wants to fight Marquez, if he wants to fight Alexander, and he wants to fight Bradley, go down to 140. I say make it there. Fight there. You know, the whole thing is that everybody's saying is, oh, well, Manny can't make 154 to you know, defend his title. He came out at 144.5, Dave. Okay, that's cool. Manny, and then you say, okay, well, make him go to 140 then. Manny can't make 140. Well, shit, you know what? Why don't we just make a Pacific weight just for Manny then?
Yeah,
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's annoying. And the thing is that you could say this about Floyd, too. They both, since they left lightweight, have, and when Manny, when he got to lightweight, really since his last fight with Marquez, they've really picked and choose who they were going to fight and made sure that everything was in their favor. They haven't been in an even odds fight.
Oh, come
in
on,
a long
Gabe.
Time, you know?
David Diaz was a true challenge.
Yeah. I don't count that belt. I don't count the 147 belt. I don't count the 154.
I don't even count that fight. I thought it was a sparring session, to be honest with you. I thought we were at wild card, to be honest with you.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. You know, that
was
fight there.
He was moving up in weight, and people didn't think he'd be a lightweight. And shit, he only stayed there one fight.
Yep.
I think it comes down to they don't need to make weight anymore. Let's just fight at our optimum weight because we're the star.
Yep.
Well,
you know,
I mean that's the thing there too that I have a problem with, you know, and is listen. A lot of times when a guy makes a set weight, okay, let's just say this.
Yeah.
Let's say Paul Williams and Sergio Martinez. Let's put that as a scenario. It was scheduled at 158. Sergio Martinez agreed to that particular weight. Okay? Paul Williams makes the weight at 158. Sergio decides not to even attempt it. He says, you know what, I'm going to come in at 165 and be penalized or make – you know, Paul Williams, nay or yay to continue on fight night to get in the ring and then both square off, okay? Right away you would hear, you know, well, hey, you know what? He didn't even come in the way, so how are you going to count that win? Now let's take it back, you know? And I know some folks would be like, yeah, but you're saying this because you picked against Manny. You know what? I just picked in the styles, okay? But you got to listen to me, what I got to say here, and then you can make your judgment. I know some people are not going to hear what I got to say because, you know, Manny's a god and whatnot, okay? But Manny,
you know, he's a congressman.
He's a congressman, absolutely. You know? He comes in at 144.5. He scheduled it for 150. This is what they asked for. They wanted it at this particular weight. So that means that Antonio Margarito had him work. He had to make the effort of coming in at 150. Manny's in his camp said, screw it. We don't need to bulk up. We're not doing shit. We're going to be comfortable. So you have one guy staying true, one guy honoring the contract, and another guy saying, well, I'm the star power. I'm the guy that could do whatever I want, you know, because I'm Manny Pacquiao. I got my face on an airplane and whatnot, and I'm congressman. I'm not going to even work at doing it. I'm not going to even attempt. Why is there no penalty on that there? You know, if you schedule it for 150, shouldn't both parties at least meet to it?
Well, I don't know.
Not really, because what it is, that's just a weight limit. But I see exactly what you're saying, Dave, is that really for Manny to struggle to make any 140 would be where he would struggle to make a weight and have to sweat down. For Margarito, you know, he's probably closer, it's probably easier for him to make 154. But he made the 150 fairly easy from whatever.
Yeah, it was
said.
Easy.
I will confirm
it was easy.
Yeah, he's a guy that's a 147 pounder, and he made 150 easy. But still, he is a guy that's coming down in weight, whereas Manny's staying at optimum weight. So yeah, he's not sacrificing as much. But the reason he gets to do that is because he can put a lot of butts in seats and sell a lot of pay-per-views, and he's the draw. And that's kind of how boxing works these days. It isn't a league.
Yeah,
it isn't based on merit.
I think the problem that I have is for the last two fights now. Well, no, the two out of the last three fights.
Three fights,
He's fought guys for titles without letting them get to the weight limit.
Hey,
that's
I'll be
why
right
I
back.
Have a problem. And number two is that I would say, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, that if you're going to fight for the junior middleweight title, you should have, at least at the very minimum, weighed 147.1 pounds. I mean, to be honest with you, he's 2.6 pounds below welterweight?
Yeah, especially when you consider, he was basically below welterweight. He was a welterweight fighting a catchweight.
That belt wasn't even real, though.
I think that's why they justified it, is because that belt is Sergio Martinez's belt.
Yeah,
he won an interim version, and they made it a full belt.
But it was really actually Vernon Forrest's belt. He just got stripped of it. So
the WBC
just makes their own rules.
When belts are involved, I think we should really adhere to what we have in place. But if there's no belts involved, if there's nothing other than just two guys getting it on, you know what? Fine. Whatever weight you want to be it. You know, it's the same thing with Paul Williams, Sergio Martinez. I think it's a crock that he had to fight for his title and couldn't use the weight limit given to him. I really think that's a crock. You know, and I think that part needs to stop. And as far as you want to fight for, you know, you want to fight someone at a fight, you know what, so be it. You know, just don't put the titles on the line.
Yeah.
Well, that's what power comes into play, though.
and Martinez was a 154-pounder. He had that belt. And when Williams' Pavlik fell apart, they put, you know, him in as a B-side and made him basically, you know, come up to middleweight to make, because Paul was fighting at middleweight and didn't want to come down, and he fought that fight. But it's funny that he stayed at middleweight, became another basically B-side to Pavlik when Williams and Pavlik couldn't get it on again. And they made him come up again, you know, or stay at middleweight. But, you know, his Top Rank, who has Manny Pacquiao, they didn't really play any weight games other than that game, basically taking a junior middleweight, making him move up. And the guy fought his way through all of it and then fought his way through the catch weight. And so maybe, like even Jason Litzau, he gets half the money, but he takes the fight. You know, look at Andre Berto. A guy like that could learn a lesson from that, that sometimes you got to gamble on yourself in order to get over. You know, and now both those guys are in line for bigger paydays. And
honestly, I think you hit the nail on the head as to what's missing in the sport. You know, sometimes you gotta put yourself at risk, and I think too many of these fighters don't. You know, without some type of proper, what they think is proper monetary compensation. You know, a lot of these guys
don't fight for pride anymore. You know what I mean? They don't want to fight for the chance.
Well, let me put it this way. What great person has ever played it safe? You know? I can't think of one great person who's ever played it safe.
Played it safe as
Who?
No.
I was going to say, well, no, I'll be good.
All right.
I'll be good, because I don't want that person calling.
Come on, anyway.
Anyways,
we don't want the good Ernie. We want the bad Ernie.
Well, it seems like then fuck it. It seems like Omar Henry is great now, according to his Twitter followers. He retired an undefeated guy. He doesn't have to fight anymore. He gets ass retired undefeated.
I meant truly great.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I'm pulling yours and Mr. Henry's leg a little bit.
Is the griddle clean yet? Because I hear you scraping it.
No, I'm stirring up. Basically, what I'm making is mushroom chicken.
Oh, that's good. That sounds really good.
Yeah, it's cream of mushroom, Monterey Jack cheese, chicken.
I'm pretty sure our listeners want to know if you're going to serve us all since you're cooking right now and stuff.
Hey,
you know?
if you guys can make it to Monterey Park, you're more than welcome to. Now I'm dropping in a little bit of milk to cream it out.
Wow,
now you're
on Iron Chef.
Yeah. You know, let's move on. I want to get into the whole Andre Ward Cycle Bika fight. A lot of fight fans, really honestly, were not happy with Ward. I was there, I covered it live, and I got to say, I was entertained. I was really surprised nobody was entertained. I was really surprised that a lot of people, even a lot of the people that were in attendance to the Oakland Arena, the Oracle Arena for the Ward fight, a lot of people didn't even not know who Bika was. Maybe that's why it only like a little bit over 4,000 people that showed up. You know, from the last time when Green was there, it was estimated 11,000. But a lot of folks were like, "Oh, you know, Ward's gonna knock this guy out in two rounds." And I was like, "What? What are you guys?" Well, I can't believe this is even being said. I mean, I'm sitting there in press room, and I'm in between two guys, okay, that are covering this, media guys. And one guy to my left and the next guy to my right, he goes, I think Ward's going to knock him out like a second, third round. And I said, second, third round? I was telling you this, Gabe. Remember? I go, are you serious? And he said, well, I don't even know. No, and I started throwing, you know, my reasons why. I said, dude, Pika's never been stopped. You know, he's been in there with Butte, you know, Calzaghe. You know, he's been in there with some pretty tough guys. This is a good workhorseman here. And he said, well, I don't even know who he is. You know, that's why I just said. I said, dude, how could you make a judgment off of that? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, too, that I had a problem with is that immediately after the fight, so, you know, I had a good friend of mine come up to me and he goes, Dave, would you press by this? And I said, yeah, I was. Actually, I thought this was a great fight for him. It showed me a lot. I was able to read a lot about this fight. And he said, dude, all he did was hug. I said, well, wait a minute. Let's stop there for a moment. That was Bika's game plan. Now, you're going to blame Ward on fighting Bika's game plan better than Bika?
Yeah, even Bika at the end of the fight was, like, complaining, you know, to Ward and to the ref. And I'm like, dude, you set the tone. You know, the clinches kind of began, and he's a rough-and-tumble dude. He threw an elbow before Andre did, although Andre threw a better elbow. You know, I think it was in the ninth round. And Ward, he's a guy that just, in the last press conference, he said, I'm going to do what I have to do, and I'm going to prevail. And that's what he did. He prevailed. He had some trouble in the first three rounds trying to figure it all out. Bika is a tough guy. He went tough rounds with Joe Calzaghe. He knocked out John Falmendi and then fouled him while he was down. But he wasn't going to get up. If he did, he was going to get knocked out when he did. This is a tough dude with a good right hand and good balance, a good teacher. He was all ready to go. And Ward had some trouble with him. And, it was an ugly fight. It was hard to watch. If I was watching it live, it would not have been as enjoyable as it was on TV, I think, because there's a lot of inside work that you just don't really see. And so, you know, I just think in some sense, you know, there's some people that think what he's doing is holding. And the rule is you got to have both hands free, you know, punching and no wrestling. But to me, what Ward is doing is positioning constantly inside. He's got your arm one way, then he's kind of flipping it at the inside. He's kind of wearing your arms out. He's putting in a punch with the other hand while the other hand's working to change guard. It's not wrestling to me. It's protecting yourself on the inside and doing what you have to do to win. And eventually he did kind of box a little more from the outside and get the combinations going. And if I had something bad to say, I would say that Ward still smothers himself and hasn't mastered range yet. But overall, I was fine with the performance. I saw it late. Everybody else was complaining about it. Then I finally saw it. And I didn't see what everybody else saw, I guess, or they didn't see or you and I saw.
Well, you know, the thing is if you set yourself up in believing that you're going to see Ward be explosive or have a KO power, or if you think that he's going to be a defense whiz, then you've already set yourself up of being disappointed. I've went into these Ward matches, Andre Ward matches, of expecting what has been given to me of the past. Okay, meaning what we saw from Green, what we saw from Kessler. I don't see him really doing anything different than we've been able to see, since then. I had said, is he going to be able to change his style, or is he going to fall into Bika's game plan, being there where Bika wants to be in the mix with him to rough him up? I really thought, you know what, he wasn't going to do that. We saw glimpse of him being in the outside, using that great jab that he has, snapping Bika's head back and stuff. But he felt, you know what, I'm the stronger guy. I'm more comfortable in the inside, and this is where I'm going to stay. Now, is it TV friendly? No. But is it getting the wins? Yeah. You know, I mean, if you're going to complain about a particular guy's style, complain about the opponent never adjusting to Ward. You know what I mean? Point blank is that Bernard Hopkins has this similar style. A lot of us are not really happy with his style and what he does, but he does continue to get the wins. But if you look at the guys that beat him, there were the guys like Jermaine Taylor to Calzaghe, where they decided not to let him tie him up, you know, not let Bernard close that distance. They stayed in the outside. They used their jab. They used boxing skills. They used their leg, you know. That's what's going to take to beat Ward. That's what's going to take to make Ward to adjust to their game plan, is to fight him the outside, you know. Would Durrell have given them that possibility, I say no, because Durrell's still young in the game, you know, and really we don't know if Durrell's going to come back, even though he's been preaching he's going to come back on March, you know. But, you know, I mean, Durrell to me traps himself, you know, and that thought, and I even told people, and they said I was crazy, and I said, I actually think Beeka's a much tougher fight at this point of Ward's career than Durrell is, because Durrell is so unsure of himself and his abilities.
I disagree.
You know, well, what was that?
I just stopped you in your tracks.
You disagree that you think Durrell's going to do better than Ward?
Well, no, I think Durrell will do better than Beeka. Yeah, definitely.
I think
athleticism can account for a lot of things. I think if we look at you know, Ward's opponents of late, you know, the one thing that's been missing out of the equation is the athleticism that Durrell has. You know, I think it's one of those things that Durrell has, I mean, Ward has yet to see, is someone who's truly his match athletically. You know, the closest we saw was Kessler, but I don't even think Kessler is.
I think he shuts him down on that, though, to tell you the truth, because this is because I think
that
Durrell.
We don't know that.
I know that. I know we don't know that, but this is just what I'm painting in my head, okay? And is that what I've seen of Durrell is. He's by far the most athletic out of all the guys at 168, the fastest too. But has he hit that potential of him knowing how to control it yet? I haven't seen him being able to really control it yet. Where he does fall apart and he traps himself, you know what I mean? Where that's what Ward would take advantage of, you know, be able to close that distance and frustrate Durrell by the clinching and inside fighting that Ward does possess and stuff. That's why I thought Beeka was to me at this point of Ward's career was a tougher match, because Beeka was so inviting to that, you know what I mean? Because that's his style. Where Ward would have to chase down Durrell, you know, and to me the Beeka fight was a very physical fight for Ward, where I was wondering how will Ward react to a guy that also does headbutts, that is also a dirty fighter, that's also likes to be at the inside. It's not uncomfortable in being the inside. And he answered everything to me on that fight there. You know, he showed me he could stay composed, he can make minor adjustments, and he can make sure he owns up to what he's doing in the ring. And I was impressed by that.
I was impressed by... The one thing that I guess I could say that I take away from the Beeka fight is that I was impressed with Dre's maturity as far as the fight is concerned. I think had he had a guy like that in front of him when he was still doing show boxes and stuff, I think he would have flustered a little bit and maybe even blown the fight trying to prove his worth against a guy who's wanted someone to go rough and tumble. But you know what? While Ward was rough and throwing dirty taxes right back at Beeka, he was also intelligent with it. So I think it was a good mix. And I was impressed by what Ward did. Did I like it? It was okay. It had its moments. And I think the one thing I will take away from it is, like I said, I think the maturation process of Andre Ward is in full bloom. And I think it's bode well for him after the Super 6, when he probably takes on a guy like Tay, and maybe up to 175 when he starts taking on, you know, bigger guys. I think the maturation process is there in place to where he can now recall certain scenarios and sequences and fighters that he had in the past.
You know, the only thing that I was not impressed with, and I think I was kind of vocal about this at the fight, at after, was the ring card girls. They suck, man. You ain't got to get some better looking ring card girls. These girls look like they found them in front of a Home Depot and they just put on some bikinis on them and then just shot them out there.
That's you Norte people, man. You guys are like, I mean, you can't compare them to the Southern California women. You just can't.
No, man, get out of here. There's plenty of beautiful women here in Northern California.
The best looking ring card girls I ever saw was in the Tachi Palace in Lemoore, California.
Oh, my God, yeah.
In the Central, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, in the Central Valley.
But they've actually
trust him from SoCal.
No, listen, Goosen has dropped that, though. They're not as great as before. They're not as great as before, but you know.
Because
but I know
he had to use cheaper NoCal product.
I guess so.
Trust me, come down. You got to come down, babe. There's plenty. That's the thing that got me. You know what I mean? There's so many beautiful women here in the Bay Area that they just found a few girls that look like me. They just got out of rehab or something. You know what I mean? They're just terrible. This is how bad they look, Ernie. I mean, I don't know if you watch. I don't know if they even show the recar girls and stuff, but they look so bad that the bikinis were actually wearing them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It didn't fit them. It didn't even fit them. You know what I mean? It was all saggy. It just didn't look right. I mean, that was the only time. I normally when I go to fights, we take pictures of the recar girls. But Jesus Christ, man, I was afraid to point my camera where the lens just, you know, you hear the crack out of it there and stuff. Hey, got some fights coming up this Saturday. Got some fights coming up. Gable, you want to break down some fights, fight schedule really quick before we call in Brandon Rios, who wants to talk about the Victor Ortiz shot.
Plus he's got a little bit of an announcement, too. It was a good thing.
Okay.
Wow. Thanks for springing that on me. You can text me next time you want me to pull up the link. It's interesting that as I go to maxboxing.com to look up the fight schedule done by Marty Mulcahy, you'll see part two of my very long story on Sergio Martinez. So if you want to go there, there's part two.
Shameless self-plug.
Yes, absolutely. That's all I do.
You know I'm fucking with you.
It was kind of a thing. Well, actually, we were in October and you were taking your sabbatical in Big Sur. There was a guy that brought up me being a shameless self-promoter because I always mention the guy I work with, Steve Kim. And it's true. I am a shameless self-promoter. Here we are, December 3rd.
I'm sorry, but what's wrong with mentioning Steve Kim? He's one of the preeminent sports writers in the sport. I mean, we don't get shit when we mention Ioli or Rafael, even though we do it in a negative tone. I mean,
I never do. I like Kevin.
I think Kevin's a little bit of a hypocrite. I gotta be honest with you. When you question Rocky Warriors' heart for not facing a left-hander when you've been, you know, training to fight Chris John, and all of a sudden they want to throw a lefty on you. You know, I think you got to step into the ring once, at least one time, to question someone's heart. You know, and then when he calls the Margarito Manny fight disgusting, yet who's there in fourth row? Kevin Ioli. I think it's a little bit of a hypocritical stance, but. That's neither here nor there. I don't see anything wrong with mentioning Steve Kim. And I do it all the time.
I just think, you know, covering it is kind of his job. I don't think he can tell Yahoo, you know, I can't be there. But he's got to give his honest opinion. If that's how he felt, you know, maybe he could have done a basic fight report and like I treated. Well, I don't know. I work for more of an independent site. So if I tell Steve I got a real problem with this fight, I'm not covering it, or I'm going to cover it real basic just to do my job. He doesn't have a problem with that, but that's a luxury that I enjoy, and that's, you know, and the only reason he gives me that is because I mentioned his name on this show as much as possible. here is the fight schedule for this weekend. December 3rd, Friday, 2010, at the Chumash Casino in Santa Ynez, California, on Showtime Showbox, the new next generation. Or is it the new generation? Luis Franco, 7-0 versus Eric Hunter, 15-1. I know very little about these fighters. Is that a good fight?
That's a good fight. I bet Luis Franco is Gary Shaw's latest signee. A lot of people are touting him a little bit. This Eric Hunter guy is going to come to fight, from what I understand, from what I've been told. So I expect this to be a really good fight.
Latif KO'd, 14-0 versus Ed Perry, 18-4-2. I think this is more of a showcase fight for Latif, who's a really good fighter out of the wild card. Very raw, but he's got a lot of potential, a lot of strength. Not a lot of upper body movement. He's very stiff in the upper body and kind of wide a little bit with his punches, but he's got great power, a lot of heart. Should be an action fight. Underneath that, Kendall Holt, I believe, fighting for Golden Boy Promotions now. Is it Golden Boy?
No, he's with Shaw.
Gary Shaw. Yeah, Gary Shaw. Sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, the Golden Boy signed Paulie Malignaggi. Kendall Holt fighting 25-4 versus Octavio Narvaez, 7-9-1. Probably more of a get-back fight for Kendall. I'm picking Kendall. Over on Telefutura in Guadalajara, Mexico, Gilbert Gonzalez, 18-1 versus Noe Bolanos, 21-5-1. I'm going to go with the chalk on that one. Underneath that,
Noe Bolanos was the guy originally slated to face Brandon Rios on
Saturday's card, but when, you know, of course, when Pavlik moved off, you know, that's what happened. But good to see him get a fight out, you know, even in spite of it.
Yes. Underneath that, Marco Barabán, 9-0 versus the dreaded TBA. I'm going to go with Marco on that one. At the Bell Center in Montreal, Canada, we have David Lemieux, 24-0 versus Pernell Gates, 18-1. Lemieux is really good, power, solid amateur pedigree, but they're still force feeding him a little bit, so I expect him to get a nice knockout. Underneath
yeah,
that is
David
Sebastian
Lemieux.
His quality.
I like
though.
That kid.
Yeah. But anybody that can move and has a nice stick is going to give him a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
He doesn't really face anybody slick at all right now. Sebastian Demers is coming back underneath that, 31-3, versus Renan Saint-Just. I don't speak French, but I'm pretending. 21-2-1. And then we'll move to Saturday, December 4th, 2010, at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. I know Ernie's going to be there. I'm going to be there.
Yeah. Leaving the ring will be there.
Saul will be there.
Mm-hmm.
We have Humberto Soto, 53-7-2 versus Urbano Antillon, 28-1. That's gonna be a hell of a fight.
That should have been the headliner for that fight.
Yeah, really should have. Who are you picking in this, Dave? I'm gonna wait a second. I'm gonna hear what you guys say.
God, you know what, man? Antillon is I think a lot of people kind of wrote him off of his KO, you know, but he was winning that fight. He made that mistake. Soto is a tough guy, though. Humberto, I mean, there's no doubt about that, you know. This is, you know what's funny? This was a fight that I really wanted to see back in 2009, you know, I believe. And me and Steve Kim were talking about this. Oh, God, I'm dropping his name now. They're going to start writing me emails about it and stuff. But me and Steve were talking
about this.
Yeah. We were talking about this fight, and Antillon was there. And, you know, and we had both said, you know, that the skill level that Antillon brings, you know, he's a tall guy, first off, in that division. You know, he's not the smallest guy in that division and stuff, but it would be – I think a lot of us are thinking it's going to be one of those brawls, but it's going to be one of those types of fights where it's going to be who takes the momentum, and it's going to be one of those, you know, systematic type of fights and stuff. That's it, to me, is an intriguing bout. That to me, is what makes boxing, you know. One guy likes to go to the top. The other guy likes to work the body, you know, and sets up to the body, you know. Antillon, to me, he's going to have to watch for the body shots that Humberto's going to be. He's going to, you know, throw to his body. I think that's what – how well is he going to receive those shots from Humberto, you know? And Humberto's a strong guy. Antillon has been tested. He's been dropped already. He's been knocked out. Humberto, it just seems to – I don't know if we could say he's gotten better, Dave. I don't know. Am I wrong about that? I think he's kind of stayed where he's been at with his level of opponents that's been put in front of him. Could I be wrong about that?
I'm picking Soto by knockout round five or six.
Wow.
The reason why I say that is because I think a lot of Urbano Antillon was left in the gyms of Maywood.
I think you're right, you know. I think you're right about that. Huh.
Yeah, I think this kid,
that's
he sparred
said,
with
know,
everybody, anybody you can think of. And if you've ever been down to Maywood, Gabe can attest to this 100%. They go to war down there. They don't play around. And I really think that Urbano is a product of the wars down there. And it's good in a way because he gets experience, but it's also kind of bad in that he's taking a lot of punishment, you know,
he took punishment.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's one of those things where I'm not sure his chin can hold up to what Soto's going to throw. Now, I think Soto, I think Soto's regressed at 135. I don't think he's the same fighter at 130 as at 135, but I still think he's got
more
in
the
tank.
Yeah,
than Antillon. What do you think, Gabe?
I think it's. I agree with you on all those points. But I think that Soto, I mean, look at what he's been like since he moved to 135.
Exactly.
You know, Jesus Chavez, David Diaz, Ricardo Dominguez, and Fidel Munoz all took him the distance.
Right.
I think it's going to be a distance fight. Maybe Urbano gets stopped on accumulation late, but I think if Soto realizes, looks at those four fights and says, you know what, I'm not a guy that's too big for the weight class like I was at 126 and 130. I'm not going to walk over dudes anymore, and I can't go to war. Instead, he just boxes and moves and is a picture of economy. Then I think he could box safely to a decision or even a late stoppage. But if he goes to war and stays on the ropes and tries to bully Urbano and plays to his strengths, I think Urbano's got enough in the tank to hurt him to the body and to kind of overwhelm him a little bit. But I still think that Soto can adjust in the fight and pull out of something like that and still win it. I pick Soto to win it either very easy or make it hard on himself, but I still pick him to win.
Yeah, and you know, that's why I was going back to the whole, I think it was 2009, where Ante Leon, you know, looked just at his best, at his peak. He was strong. That, to me, would have been the perfect time. You know, timing is always the essence of boxing. And right now, Soto looks like the more fresh he looks like the more fresh fighter. He looks like the guy that still is able to maintain himself and being a world class, where Ante Leon is still kind of, you know, kind of falling off. But going back to, again, where Soto has kind of stayed in the same level of his opponents, you know, like you said, you know, Gabriel, you know, from Diaz and on forth and stuff, you know, where he didn't knock him out. He went the distance to them. To me, Soto was so good at one time that he couldn't get those fights he wanted, that he just ended up becoming the level of his oppositions. And he may be at that point right now. Him stopping Ante Leon, it could be very possible. But, God, I think I'm going to have to go with the distance on this one as well.
Yeah.
You know? Great fight, though. It's going to be a great fight.
Underneath that is Nonito Donaire, 24-1. Versus Volodymyr Sodorenko, 22-2. This is a tough fight.
I agree. A
tough dude. And you know, Nonito is a guy that's been not kicking it into gear in terms of opposition. And I just kind of wonder, you know, how long can he keep doing this? You know, fighting guys that he can't really, you know, has to get himself mentally up for, but isn't, you know, and he's looking ahead to a fight that he just signed with Fernando Montiel. This could be a dangerous fight for him.
This could be that looking forward type fight.
Yeah,
I agree with
you.
Right.
If the focus isn't there and the shape isn't there, I really, you know, I worry about him in this one. But, you know, I think the weight, you know, going to up to 118 is going to be good for him. He's got size on Sodorenko, who's only 5'4". And, you know, Sodorenko is also not a knockout guy. He's only got 7 knockouts in 26 fights. You know, then his losses, it probably could go rounds. I mean, because he went the distance with and Selmo Moreno, like twice. So I think it's a distance fight, and I think Nonito pulls it out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I like what I've seen from Nonito. I don't know whether or not if he is not focused on this fight because of the whole Fernando Montiel. But what I've heard, that you're absolutely right, the fire had kind of dimmed a little bit because he wasn't getting those fights that he was asking for. But what I'm hearing right now, we had Robert Garcia Grandpa on Leaving the Ring Español, which airs on Monday. But for this whole month, they'll be up on Tuesday night. So if shameless plug. I got to give it out for the guys that are doing a fantastic job in Leaving the Ring Español, except for their small little glitch that they had in the beginning of their show. They're doing a great job and stuff. And Robert Grandpa was on the show and said, you know, Donaire, since the Fernando Montiel fight has been signed, the fire really looks like it's came back. You know, he looks very motivated, very determined. He understands what is in front of him coming up on December 4th. The kid does have a great amount of speed, and he's really fairly pretty big for his division right now. But going back again, you look at the oppositions that have been put in front of him, you know, which the Ring Magazine really has got me puzzled. They have him. It's pound for pound off of the Victor Chinian fight that happened in, 2007? And he hasn't fought anybody of that criteria to keep him at that rate. So I think that if he doesn't have his all his I's dotted and his T's crossed in this fight, you could see an upset. But like I said, that fire there seems to be have reunited. So I'm looking at Dornier going on a distance on that fight.
I agree. I think it's going to be an 8-4 type of decision where Nonito's going to look, you know, at times maybe a little flat, but I think his focus is going to bring it through because I think he realizes just how important this all becomes, you know, for him, simply because, you know, he knows that around the horizon is the dream matchup he's been hoping for, you know, other than, you know, Vic Darchinian. He's wanted Fernando Montiel since, I want to say the Raul Martinez fight. You know, he's mentioned Montiel for a while, and I actually think now that he's, you know, I don't see him losing focus. I see him just saying, okay, you know what, I'm going to bear down. This guy's, you know, tricky. He's rough. I'm going to do what I got to do to win and, you know, just get this out of the way. So, you know, 8-4.
You know, really, really quick, and letting any listeners and stuff like that, just to let them know, right now we're about to patch in somebody that's real as they can get out there,
yeah.
A young champion. I mean, not a champion yet, but a young contender.
Soon to be.
And we've had him on twice before, and he is a friend of Leaving the Ring. But if you have any small children, because I've had this tweeted to me, okay, you know, I had my child here next to me and stuff, please send your children off so that they're not able to hear this. I'm giving you forewarning, okay? This kid does drop numerous F-bombs and everything else, but I do enjoy it. He does speak because, this guy's rolling and cut, you know, and we're calling in right now, Brandon. Brandon, what's up, brother?
What's up, man? What's good?
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. You're live right now on Leaving the Ring. How you doing, man? You sound tired, brother.
Man, I've been up since 24 hours already, maybe a little bit longer.
What are you doing? That's it? You're at the rave or what? You partying or what, Holmes?
I'm coming down on a Red Bull crash.
Don't take too much, man, because then you'll end up like Kermit Cintron and stuff, you know, jumping out of rings. And we don't want that, right?
I might have to do that one today. Make the fan more interesting for me. or should I say to get somebody else to talk about me, more people to talk about me.
There you go, man. Well, hey, it seems like your name keeps popping up all over the place, you know. Obviously after the Freddie Roach video that Ellie sent out there,
yeah,
a lot of heat off of that one there, brother. What happened, man? Tell me what went down that day. I mean, there's really no way around it. You said what you had to say. You know, it was a joke, but it was done poorly, right?
Exactly. Like I said, man, it was between cameras, you know. Freddie Roach was talking shit, so we talked shit back, and we did a low blow, a mean one, and he didn't like it, so he went to go snitch and try to tell on us. So, you know, that was like in elementary again, snitching and telling on each other. So, it happened, you know, but, you know, I did it, yes. It was a bad video. I wasn't referring to anybody with that type of disease. It was just between camps. That's all about it was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's what a lot of people lost sight of is that it was just jabs from both guys and stuff. And unfortunately, you know, one was a little bit thicker and stronger and personal than the other one.
Well, here's the thing. Brandon,
the media made it sound worse than it was. The media is the one that egged it on and made it put the blame on us, like we were the bad guys. You know, it wasn't nothing like that. It was just, like I said, it was between camps, and that was all about it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Brandon. It's Ernie. Hey. But weren't you kind of responding to kind of the comments that Roach had made as well, calling your friend, and what you admitted is a brother like you, to you, an attempted murderer, right?
I can hear you. Yeah, y'all guys breaking out. What was that again?
Well, I mean, you were kind of responding to the comments Roach had made about Tony, calling him an attempted murderer, things like that, right?
Yeah, see, and that's the type of stuff, see? If he wants to go and saying stuff like that, like assuming Tony was a murderer, stuff, he wasn't convicted of the murder. That's like, that's false advertising, you know, that he's talking smack. So, you know, exactly, like I said, things got heated up between our camps. And Tony's like my brother, you know, and I got a lot of respect for him as well as he got for me. You know, him and his family, he got that he respects my family. So, like I said, Tony's like my brother, and for him to say stuff like that and to choose a man for something like that that was false, as it was false, he doesn't have his correction. So, you know, like I said, it was just a thing between camps, and it got heated up to a moment.
Well, let's move on from that there, brother. You know, we had Victor Ortiz. We actually went out to their media workout at the Wild Card to go check out Amir Khan and Victor Ortiz, who's got a fight coming up on December 11th on HBO. And when we asked him about you, right away, you know, his response was that you need him for money, and some guys don't grow up from elementary. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, like he said, kids will be kids. Exactly. So he'll be a kid, and I'll be doing my thing, becoming a man, and as I am a man, because you know what, I just have my baby today, you know, and I'm taking care of my family, taking care of my baby. I'm taking care of my bills. I just bought trucks, you know. I mean, I'm a man. I'm not no kid. That thing that he said, kids will be kids, he's probably referring that to somebody else, or probably himself. And him said I need him for money, dude. I don't need him for nothing. I don't even want him. To me, I'll do it for free. It's not about the money. Like I said, it's personal between him, and he knows what it is about, and he's saying that he's trying to deny that he don't know what it is about. But like I said, you know, hopefully his manager, De La Hoya, and my manager, or his promotion and my promotion get together and make this fight happen. You know, it'll be a Vargas and De La Hoya. This time Vargas come out of victory, and I guarantee this will happen. Not only a victory, but he'll make somebody stop crying and maybe make him quit again.
Did somebody direct you to the video, or did you catch it on there? I mean, did you kind of just kind of, you know, strobe by the video and saw that? And if you did, what were your thoughts on the matter?
I checked it myself, because some once in a while, you know, I go on Google, put my name, and I see like what comments people will talk about me and stuff like that, because I love it. You know, I feed off that. I love when people talk about me. It made me feel very good, because that means they're thinking about me and they're watching me, and they love to hate me, so that's what I do. And then I seen this video, like, Victor Ortiz, Brandon Reels, needs me for money. I was like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? What? So I clicked on it, and I was like, I seen this guy, oh, yeah, Brandon Reels, he's just a little kid. You know, kids will be kids, and that he needs me to fight me for money, and that I'm a nobody, that, what, this dude, I'm a nobody. If I was a nobody, at least I'm not the one that didn't quit like little girl, you know? So, you know, it's just like, he's saying stuff like that. He's like, this is stupid, man. I don't need this guy for money. I'm making my own money, and I'm doing very good at it right now. As you can see, I'm living good. I just bought a brand new truck in 2010. My baby's here. We got everything that she ever needs. My wife, she got everything that she needs. So, you know, it's like, I don't need him for money. I don't want his money. His money ain't shit to me. It's personal between me and him, and that's all it is.
You know, and congratulations, first off, the newborn baby there, brother, to you and your wife and stuff. Man, I wish I was there, because, you know, I know that Brandon did the Chicano, double look and stuff, you know? You know, that look that we all do and stuff, you know, when we feel like we don't agree with it, like, what the fuck, you know? And then stand up,
yeah.
Like, we're about to fight with the screen and all that, you know? So it's a double take, the Chicano double take, that's what it's called and stuff, man.
Brandon,
like,
thank you.
Brandon, this is Gabe Montoya. Thanks for coming on, and congratulations, man. That's fantastic. You had your first child. I'm curious, do you think, is this your first or is your second?
Third.
Wow.
Can't really hear you because you guys are breaking out a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Hello?
Wow. Hello?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Do you think all this stuff in the media, like these little videos and things like that, is this just bullshit designed to rile you up? Do you think it's really even news? I mean, do you know what's going on between you and Victor? And I don't know, it's like a piss-you-off trap, don't you think?
Yeah, it does piss me off, you know, because Victor knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's, like I'm saying, it's really personal between me and him. It's like, you know, I know Victor forever. And we grew up to the same gym, same coach, same everything. My dad was his trainer at one time, you know. So it's like, I know this guy. And for him to do what he did to me, like I said, I won't discuss it right now. I'm waiting for a bigger day when we get the fight or something. You know, we'll let it out. But he knows what he did to me, and he knows what it is. I wouldn't chase nobody. I wouldn't talk shit about somebody especially the way I did. Yeah, I do talk shit about people, but the way I did about him, that means it's more than personal. It's nothing to do with him. People are saying that he was with my wife, and that it's over girl issue or stuff like that. It's between me and him and his little brother. It's between us three, and what you call it. And it's like I said, it's nothing to do all that. You know, it's between us, and you know, like I said, it's very personal between us, because I wouldn't call anybody like the way I did that day when I did about him. Yeah, I do talk shit about people, you know, so they can accept my challenge. But this one was more than a challenge, like I said. This one was like a beatdown that I want to give somebody badly. And I don't like to do that, and I really want to.
Let's jump off this and talk about some fighting. Your last fight, Omri Lothar, have you listened to the HBO broadcast of your fight? Have you seen it?
I can't really hear you because you broke out.
Have you seen tape of your last fight?
Have you seen tape of your last fight? That's what he's asking.
Oh no, I have not seen tape of my last fight yet. Really, right now, my homie Screech, who I call Screech, but he works for HBO. He was a 24/7 guy, and he sent me the video today. I haven't been home lately because of the fact that I've been in the hospital with me and my wife, you know, waiting for the baby, which came today. So I want to, maybe tonight or tomorrow when we go home, I'll watch the video and, you know, see what they say about me and everything. I know with Omri, when I fought that day, you know, I wasn't 100% me. I wasn't 100% like when I did with Peterson. I got a notice, 8-day notice just to get ready, basically just to lose the weight, really no sparring, really nothing. So, you know, it wasn't one of my great performances. And if people can go judge me off that one, let it be. You know, that's even better for me because they don't really know Bam Bam. When Bam is on top of his game and when he trains, he's a beast. That just showed you with Peterson fight. I was the underdog. I just came out and destroyed him because I was on top of my game and I've done what I do. So if people are going to judge me for my performance about that one, it's okay with me. I know what I can do, and I know when I train, I know what I have.
Right, right.
I kind of took it the other way. I was actually impressed with the win. I thought your accuracy was really good. And it, because you took it on short notice and had to just make weight and that kind of preparation, I thought it showed more depth in you as a fighter, that you were able to kind of deal with that situation and then all the video stuff that went on and being on that big stage. And you stopped the guy. I'm not really sure what more people can ask for out of what you did.
Well, I can intervene a little bit too. I'll be a witness to this. I think Brandon had the worst week of a fighter could have in a recent stretch. First with the video.
I don't know what's
stuff.
Going on with your guys' cell phones, man. But it sounds like you guys are talking through a robot or something. I don't know, Brandon. Can you hear what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Damn, I thought I was talking to like this or something. I was like,
you
wow.
Thought, hey, you thought you were in a Star Wars flick, huh?
Yeah, well, I thought I was getting punked or something.
Yeah, is it better now?
No, it's bad. It's
horrible.
It's really horrible, man. Hey, Brandon, let me ask you this, okay? Because a lot of fight fans are kind of divided on this here right now. A lot of people are saying you guys are just doing this for self-promotions, you know, that there's really not a real beef between you and Victor. A lot of folks just want to know, is this real? Is there a real beef between you two guys? Because nobody has really kind of gave the lineup of why there's a beef between you two.
There is a really beef between us two. You know, like I said, there's people that knows that there's really a beef between me, us two. I'm not the type of person that I like to promote myself or go out there and try to make a name for myself. My name is not Ortiz. I don't do that. I don't try to act professionally in front of cameras. I don't try to be a nice guy in front of people and stuff like that. No, I'm me, and I'll be me all the time. And this is really... it's really personal, you know, and it's a real deal. Like I said, when the fight happens, then we'll start saying what happened, what he woo, you know, stuff like that. But it's really personal. Like I said, I'm not trying to sell myself because if I did, why would I want to challenge somebody at 140? You know, I still got all the big names at 135. So I still got Marquez. I still got Soto, which I fight the winner out of Soto Antion February 26th in Las Vegas. So, you know, for the WBC, so I still got those guys, you know. It's really a beast. Even though if I fight him, I'm not going to say I'm 140. I'm still going to come back down, to 135 and still do what I do at 135. So it is a big thing.
Well,
and I'm not trying to sell my name. Hell no, that's not me.
Well, let me ask you this, because you're promised the winner of Antillon and the Soto winner. Between those two guys, whoever wins, you get the shot at them. What's your prediction on that fight, and who are you hoping is going to win that you get to face and show that you're the top of the guy at 135?
Well, you know, like I said, I want Soto to win because the fact that he has a bigger name and he got more experience, and everybody's ducking Soto because he's a beast and this and that. I ducked him, stuff like that. I haven't ducked nobody since I started boxing in my whole entire life. I will never duck anybody. And I really want Soto. That's what I want, because when I beat him and knock him out, I can show the world that I am a top contender and I'm ready for Marquez. I'm ready for those types of fights. Like, I'm ready for Casillas. I'm ready for Juan Diaz. I'm ready for all of them. Guerrero, whoever they bring in that ring with me, I'm ready for. So that's why I want Soto. So I can show everybody, shut everybody up.
Before we get into your announcement, because I know you had an announcement that you wanted to talk about today.
Oh, no, it's just that he had a baby girl.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Oh, great. Great. Well, yeah, that is a big announcement. That's the biggest right there. But, hey, you know, Brandon, every time I have a chance to speak to you know, your guys' affiliation, the top rank and stuff, or like with Golden Boy, it seems to me that we're not going to be able to see these great fights, you know, with some of the Golden Boy fighters, you know, when you got Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Okay, who's
right.
Sitting right now looking at possibly getting the winner of Marquez and Casillas. That's if Marquez and Pacquiao don't come in terms of anything. But how does that make you feel knowing that both these big promoters may not give you the opportunity of getting the greatness because of the fact that they have their own feud. They have their own Victor Ortiz and Rios feud. They don't get along.
Well, you know what? I am the WA number one to fight for the belt. So you know what? I'm the mandatory. I could fight Miguel Acosta or Marquez. They're getting a chance. Which in August 28th, I read that August 28th they have to say yes or no if they're going to fight me or not. If you're mandatory to fight, I don't give a shit what promotion you're in. You know, why would that make a difference? You know, you are the mandatory. You did your job. You beat the guy so you could become a mandatory to fight for the WBA. So who gives a shit what promotion you are and stuff like that? Put that stuff aside and let's just fight and give the fans what they want. Because I tell you this, I'm an exciting fighter. People love to come see exciting fights. People don't love to see people run. And Marquez is an exciting fighter. And he can fight and he can brawl and he can box. Guerrero, to me he's not as exciting, you know. With Joel Casamayor, he should have knocked him out. You know, he didn't really do nothing really good with that guy. So you know what? I think to me, people would like to see and probably pay more if Marquez and I will fight because of styles. The styles are the factors in this game, and the style makes perfect opponents and perfect fights.
Yeah,
I completely agree. Why the hell else are you fighting guys in different weight classes and in the division, moving up and becoming a mandatory if you can't get your shot? Isn't that the way it's supposed to work? And you know, yeah. I don't know if you heard me earlier, but
well,
can you hear me now?
Well, I know I heard you about the mandatory. That's something about I posted since I won the mandatory. You know. Yeah, I should have got the shot already. I should have got Miguel Acosta. If he didn't want it, he should give up his belt and let me fight Marquez. But you know what? Fuck, I don't know what's going on with all that. But my manager now, you know, maybe after this fight, you know, when I fight for the WBC, maybe Marquez will want a piece of me because if he wants to get all the belts, because he got WBO and WBA, maybe he might want a WBC. So why not take a chance and fight me, in which bring those belts to me, and I'll make a good name for them, and I'll show the world that I'm ready for those. You know, I'm ready, and I'm ready to be a superstar and one of the pound-for-pound guys at 135.
I mean, what I was saying to you earlier, obviously now you can hear me, was that for me, the Lothar fight, I didn't look at it as a negative. You took the fight on short notice. You killed yourself to make weight. And then you knocked the guy out. And I thought your accuracy was fine. What you're going to hear on HBO when they're talking is how out of shape you look and that you're not – they're not looking at the fight at all. They're just looking at your body, and it's not bodybuilding, it's boxing. I thought you did a good job, you know, considering the circumstances. And you're on a huge stage, and you got a knockout. What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Luke,
I don't know what to tell you, brother.
Luke, I am your father. That really does sound like Star Wars, bro. I'm sorry to say this. But yeah, it was horrible.
Luke.
But I am your father. It sounds like you guys are talking into
a fan.
Fan.
Yeah.
Talking to me.
Still?
Yeah. Hey, Brandon. Well, thanks, man, for calling in and speaking to us, brother. And you know, we're gonna continue supporting you and keep rooting for you and stuff. And thanks for coming on and clarifying what happened with the Fred Roach and about, you know, Victor Ortiz. And hey, can't wait to see you get in the ring with the winner of Soto and Antelion. And congratulations on the baby. On the baby, you know.
Thank you guys. You know, I'm right here holding my little 6-pound baby right here in my hand, and I just want to tell everybody, you know, exactly like this guy was saying. I heard something about the way my body looks and stuff like that. Boxing supposed to be a bodybuilder, supposed to be a Pacquiao body style. That don't mean shit to me. You know, if you come in 100% ready and conditioned, that's all it takes. Because I tell you one thing, I can do sit ups for days and days and days. And I don't get a six pack for shit. But I tell you, I am in really good shape though. I'm in really good shape. Like with the Peterson fight, my body looked like wow, this guy's not even in shape. But you know what? I'm in shape. I just don't get six pack. I work my body all the time. Work my abs. Even Robert works my abs. I have this guy that helps me work my abs, and I just don't get a six pack. I don't know why, but I just don't get a six pack.
Yep. I mean, hey.
And maybe too, you know, like Chavez, he never had a six pack, and he was a badass. Barrera never had a six pack, really, and he was a badass. You know,
exactly.
Fights like that, there's some fighters that don't have six packs. Some fighters guys just don't get them, and they work at it, but they just don't get them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I think that happens to a lot of Latinos. You know, we don't get that type of physique and stuff. I mean, we do. I think it's just that it doesn't stand out as much and stuff. You know,
you got that Indian blood going
yeah.
on, and
yeah.
Vargas had the six pack once, but. That was for the De La Hoya fight, you know. That was about it.
Oh, jeez.
What? Hey, Brandon. Hey, brother. Thank you again. Hey, Brandon, real quick, though. Is that you on Twitter, man?
Dude, I don't have a Twitter. I don't have – I barely have a – I don't have a Facebook, but Top Rank made me a fan page at Facebook. I don't
I
know
told
if
people you guys.
Are making Twitters and shit like that for me. That's not me, though, man.
Okay.
Everybody asking me, "You have a Twitter?" Fuck, no, I don't have a Twitter. I don't even know if I did. I don't even know my own password.
There you go, man. Brandon Reeves, Bam Bam, on Leaving the Ring. Again, brother, congratulations on the newborn, and we'll talk soon again, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you, everybody, and I will be at the Antion fight, so I'll be there watching those guys. So thank you, guys, and thank you for having me on the show again. Thanks.
Absolutely, bro. Talk to you later.
I love it.
Oh, man.
Can you hear me now? Do I still sound like a robot?
No, now you sound better. I don't know.
Yeah, see, I think it's off. You know what? I think it's the maybe the amount of people on one line shared like this. Because I noticed that when we get more and more people.
Your phone is doing it really bad right now, Ernie.
Is it?
God, yeah.
Ernie sounds fine to me. I don't understand it.
How
about now?
Yeah, you sound a lot better, you know. But you know what? People on Twitter are sending out to us saying that there's not that they're not hearing anything. That you guys sound perfectly fine. It could just be me,
your phone,
my phone, and Brandon's phone. I don't know. That's
well, you got to trade in the laser and or you know the razor and get
the pink razor.
I see. I didn't hear any. I heard something about Ernie wore Peak's underwears or something like that.
Come on! Wow, just stop.
No, I can't hear anything. You know, it's actually pretty bad. But wow, yeah.
Now,
I can hear you fine.
Yes, I hear you fine.
Weird.
It's Dave. Dave's got a ghetto phone.
No. I got a headset, man. You know, I'm using the Skype and it's working perfectly fine. I mean, I don't know why, but you guys, Brandon was able to hear me clear, but you guys are coming in like Darth Vader, talking into the fan.
Well, gentlemen, actually, in about 12 minutes, we're going to have Rich Murata on, I guess most people would know who he is. He's a fight announcer, but he's kind of one of the pioneers of boxing radio. He had a show called The Neutral Corner for years, back from 1999 to 2010 on AM 750 here in Los Angeles. It was actually the very first radio show that I was ever on when I got to L.A. like 3 years ago and did some stuff on Kermit Cintron and Paul Williams, how they didn't fight. And he had me on to kind of explain what the hell that was about. So we're about 12 minutes away from calling him and having him on. I probably should finish the fight schedule though, because we got.
Go ahead. I'm gonna do something too to see if I can fix that. Your guys' voices. I don't know why, but it's like I said. It sounds like you guys are talking to a fan. So go ahead and do that, and I'm gonna try to fix this. I'll be right back.
All right, Ernie, will you stay with me? At the Honda Center, Anaheim, California, also the co-featured is Mikey Garcia, 23-0 versus Oliver Lanchi, 18-1-2. I'm going with Mikey Garcia in that one.
I think it's a tougher fight than I think originally he was supposed to face. Oh God, I forget, but it was a better opponent for him. Lockie's that guy. I don't know if people remember, but he was the guy that basically
there
ran around.
There we go. Now you guys sound better. Okay.
Basically ran around Juanma Lopez for 12 rounds and you know, lost a very boring kind of lopsided decision. And it could be, you know what, it's a good test for Mikey. I think a lot of people are anointing Mikey in the next champ. And these are the types of fighters that he has to go through to get this.
You know, what's weird is he lost that fight, but he did win a bet with Murad Hakkar that he could have a worse fight than his fight with Hopkins. Oh, my God. Yeah, that fight was absolutely painful. We're going to have Ricky Burns is going to make his return to the ring, 29-2 versus Andreas Evanson, 13-1.
Nice.
And then Alex Arthur is also on the undercard of that against the dreaded TBA. And at the sport, Congress Center at Schwerin, Germany, Alexander Dimitrenko, 30-1 versus Albert Sosnowski, 46-3-1. Underneath that is Juan Carlos Gomez, 48-2 versus Harold Sanyers. And also in Mexico, Saul Alvarez takes on Ludmore Andu, 48-11-2. And Daniel Ponce de Leon, 40-2 versus Sergio Medina, 35-3. And that is your weekend fight schedule.
And you know what I mean? You know what a fight we didn't talk about is last week on Friday, what to kind of really set the momentum and the pace for the weekend fights to roll in was Hasegawa's win over, Bargos. That was an excellent fight. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that.
Yeah, it was a hell of a fight, man. It was just a back-and-forth battle. Hasegawa, the guy is just for somebody that got knocked out, you know, he sure didn't act like it. He came forward. He was aggressive. What's that?
He's a stud.
Yeah, he really is. I wish he was in the tournament, man. Had him in it.
Me too. You know. What were you saying, though, Gabe?
I just thought it was a hell of a fight. You know, just back and forth action. It was really a fight that sat under the radar. Not a lot of people wrote about it. Not a lot of people watched it. I mean, some people did on, you know, my Twitter feed, definitely. I had to download it later to check it out.
Yeah, same here.
Just an awesome fight.
You know, what I like about Hasegawa is that if you really look at his legs, Gabe, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this, but he doesn't really have that traditional Japanese thick soccer legs, you know, what makes him a little bit more mobile. You know what I mean? That makes him a little bit more mobile and allows him to kind of come in and out. You know what I mean? And that's what I think.
You know what? Thick soccer legs, is that what did it?
Hey, I mean, The Koreans got it. The Chinese and the Japanese fighters, they have those really big stumpy legs, you know, and a lot of times it keeps them flat footed. It doesn't allow them to kind of get on their toes. But with Hasegawa, he doesn't have the thickness on those legs, and it allows him to be in and out. It allows him to be a good counterpuncher. That allows him to have a little bit more gifts than we've seen Asian fighters have.
He still doesn't move his head all that much, but he's gifted with a lot of power, and yeah, he's got that kind of almost like Pacquiao. He kind of, you know, his feet are the defense. They kind of move in and out, side to side,
yeah.
And he gets his combinations off. His big thing, though, is he kind of stays, his head stays stationary while he punches, and so he's not really out of the way for the counters, and that's generally a problem for him. But you know, once again, I mean, he prevailed in a really tough fight, and I really wish that he was coming over here and we could see more of him against the other 118 pounders. But you know, it's not a lock that the winner of Montiel Donaire is going to fight the winner of the four man elimination contest. So maybe that's a fight for the winner of that fight. Hasegawa.
The Hasegawa is now in line to fight world class heavy hitter Johnny Gonzalez. And that he might actually have to travel to Mexico.
That is a hell of a fight.
Yeah.
That fight a lot. Guaranteed action. I hope that fight happens. If
I
it's in
too.
Mexico, I'm still not going because it's just incredibly dangerous down there.
I was going to say, you're crazy, dude. I'm still not going to go to that.
And I think that Hasegawa is just going to be victorious in that fight, though, too. I think it's going to be a good fight. But I think he'll edge you know, a little bit more just because, you know, Johnny's kind of a shop worn fighter for me, in my opinion. You know, he's been
he's got that power in that. Yeah,
he does. He's got that power and stuff like that. But you know, he can be outboxed. We've seen it happen. You know, he can be outboxed and stuff. And you know, that Vasquez fight when he got in, I think a lot was left from there. You know, I haven't seen him improve. I've kind of seen him decline and stuff. And Hasegawa right now just seems to kind of, you know, even though getting KO'd by Fernando Montiel, he still showed me that, you know, he shook off those cobwebs. He shook off the demons in that match, and he was able to do what he needed to do with a good puncher in Barguil, you know, in Juan Carlos Barguil.
Yeah, it was just hell of a fight. Oh, wait, 7:30. Hang on a second, guys. I'll be right back. I'm going to call Rich and bring him in.
And you know, going back, man, I mean, I love the way he throws that right hand. And, you know, I think, I don't know, I like the kid a lot. You know, I'm very impressed by Hasegawa. If you haven't had a chance, listeners out there, that haven't had a chance to tune in and watch him, you can catch him on YouTube. I'm telling you, he's something there to really kind of observe.
Trademark. His trademark seems to be when he overshoots his left, he comes back with that right hook, and that's how he got out. That's how he got out Nestor Rocha in that, in one round, is that when he overshot the hook, Nestor Rocha came back up, and boom, he literally walked right into a right hook that was just devastating. And you know, I like Hasegawa's crack. He's probably actually one of my favorite fighters to watch now.
Yeah,
and I've been a fan of Burgos since the Thompson boxing days when he was fighting in Ontario. And I knew he was going to come to win. And I knew he was going to try to do his best to get
And he almost had him. Yeah, he almost had him, Ernie, on the seventh round.
Yeah,
you know?
He almost had him. He almost had him. And it's one of those things where, you know, if you could ever walk away from a loss and consider it a victory, this was it. You know, I think his name got out there to people who did not know who he was. And I take that as a very big positive for Juan Carlos.
Yeah, you know, and Juan Carlos, he was doing everything right, but he just didn't have a dancing partner that wanted to dance his tune. And, you know, and Hasegawa made the mistake of trapping himself on those ropes where Juan Carlos was able to, you know, really turn up the momentum to his favor. And Hasegawa got hurt, but was able to right away recoup. You know, where for a moment there, you're thinking, oh, no, here we go again. You know, Fernando Montiel all over again. But it didn't happen. He was able to hold his bearings and get out of danger and come back, and he adjusted. He made sure those adjustments was, you know, come in and out and stay away from the, you know, stronger guy.
It almost reminded me of a mini version of Manny versus Margarito. I mean, there was, you know, the scores indicated that, you know, Hasegawa was the clear winner, but there was perilous moments where where Burgos really got the respect of Hasegawa. And I think the same thing that happened in the Manny, you know, Margarito fight is, yeah, the scores indicated a one-sided beating, but Manny felt everything that came down his way. And I think that's kind of the same boat that Hasegawa was in. You know, he knew he was in control, but, you know, there were some perilous moments for him.
Let's bring in our next guest. I believe Gabriel Montoya has got our next guest on.
We got to call him in about 10 minutes. He was just about to get home. He's still driving,
okay.
And we wanted to get a better interview than dude driving. So
let's talk about some boxing rumors, because I'm getting thrown. There's some stuff that's being thrown at me right now, and I don't know if there's any truth to this, Gabriel. Hopefully, you know a little bit more what's going on. Possible match between middleweight king Sergio Martinez coming back to 154 to possibly face superstar Miguel Cotto. Me personally, wow. I don't know. It's interesting, but does Miguel Cotto need another loss on his record?
Here's really what's going on. I mean, it's really early right now, for one. Martinez has a mandatory due for March of 2011. I think March 17th, something like that, is the date that they have to, you know, decide by or actually fight by. HBO is not that interested in that fight. They don't think it's a good enough name for Martinez, who's only really got 2 years to go, and every fight's got to count. There's also Dmitry Pirog and Sergey Zinzurek, who they're trying to get on the network, under Artie Palullo's banner promotions. And what HBO is thinking, and maybe Lou DiBella and Artie have kind of had tentative talks about this, is doing like a co-feature card. Martinez against somebody. Maybe Andy Lee is the name thrown out. Miguel Cotto at 155 has been thrown out. It's not like in negotiations yet.
It's been thrown out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been thrown out. And then Pirog maybe against Cintron, or Zinzurek against Cintron, and the winner of that maybe goes on to come up to middleweight and fight Martinez. So there's a number of combinations, but it's just really early, and everybody's kind of going crazy and saying, this or that. But I would say that I don't like the Cotto fight either. He hasn't even proven he's a real 154-pounder, much less 160-pounder. I just don't like the fight. But Martinez and his people do contend that they can get down to 154 for the right fight.
Right.
And without much problems. They told us that on the radio last week. So,
if that fight was to materialize between Miguel Cotto, obviously it would probably be at the Garden, rightfully so. The Puerto Ricans fans will come out and support. If that's one thing the Puertoriqueños, they do show is their support for and their love for their fights and stuff. But if that fight was to materialize, now, do I like it? No. Do I see Cotto kind of doing anything that he has done at 140, even possibly at 157, at 54? No. I see him being the much smaller guy in that fight. But I could see the lure of what Martinez camp is doing, is getting in Miguel Cotto, trying to get him out of there as fast as they can to make it a baiting game for possibly getting Mayweather or Pacquiao to kind of move up. You know, it's kind of a force-fed type of thing. You know what I mean? Like, hey, look, I beat this guy, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now what's up? You know, I could see that kind of being the bait.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a definite path. But, you know, to get in that kind of, you know, get that common opponent kind of, going and saying, look, I did better than you did against this guy. I think it's also just they got to get in big name fights while they wait for things to kind of settle with Manny. And Manny's going to do his own thing, and they really don't have, at least the Martinez camp, have much interest in fighting Manny. They realize he's much smaller. They respect him as a fighter, but he's much smaller. He's not a middleweight, and they're not coming down to 150. The guy that Martinez, like you said, here, his career would be incomplete, is Mayweather. But I think that what they're thinking is that, you know, it's going to take 2 years maybe for Floyd's smoke to clear, or a year. And by that point, Martinez may have moved to a point where he's ready for that big ultimate final fight and hit a tipping point where Floyd comes back from his legal issues, needing a lot of money, and thinking that's possibly the safest fight he can take, and then the fight happens. They're not in a rush to get Mayweather, and they're not looking at him in the next two fights. It's more like the next 3 to 4 fights.
Is it me, or does it seem like Manny's choice of opponents has really dwindled to a small, small select few? You're the top guy, you're the head cheese, everybody wants to fight you, but in reality, the window of actual opponents seems really small for Manny right now. I mean, you know, it was kind of a creative strain to
that's what happens Margarito. When you become the cash cow, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think.
But I think it also pigeonholes, you know, I think he pigeonholes himself a little bit in that, you know, he's not willing to go down to 140. He's not willing to go up to 154. He's kind of in that 142 to 144 and a half, you know, range where there's not too many the guys, you know, what a once hot welterweight division is not so hot anymore, you know, and everybody kind of moved up to 54, and he's not willing to go up to 54. And, you know, well, if you don't want to go up to 54, then go down to 40. Well, I'm really not willing to go down to 40. You know, he kind of pigeonholed himself a little bit by using his own weight stipulations, you know, to his advantage. But now it's kind of become a disadvantage because, you know, there's not too much going on at 47 right now. And
well, I think they can afford to be patient, though. They can get – Marquez will do whatever it takes to get that fight. He can do –
I doubt he makes – That's what ruins the fight, though.
Yeah.
But really, I don't think they care. You know,
Boston now is
I only care about what they weigh on the night of the fight, and both these guys weighed the same the night of the fight, basically, or close to.
And that's such a retarded thing, and yeah. I argue that on
he's
the board
promoter.
All the time. It's so retarded. I mean, one guy is not struggling down to a weight while the other one working his way down to a weight. Yeah, there is a big difference. Come on, wake up.
It's just Bob is like changes the rules more than the WBC. You know, he just changes them when they in the meaning and the wordplay whenever it suits him. That's his job. He's a promoter. To me, you're absolutely right. Manny has to either what he's probably going to do is Marquez or Mosley. What I'm hearing right now is Mosley is close
right.
to a done deal. They'll do that fight. Then they'll probably do Marquez. They have a couple more options and two more fights where they can make a lot of money, and they'll probably do that. That's why Manny's kind of become irrelevant in some ways to me. Floyd has got all the.
I think he's become
legitimate.
Gabe, I think he's became irrelevant to a point of how do you overlook his career when he's ended it, when he's ended it? Like, where do we put him in place in history? You know.
I can't even answer that until he's done. I just mean irrelevant in that, like Floyd, he's playing in a different league than everybody else.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about his skills. He's just in Manny League, and Floyd's in Floyd League, just like Oscar was in Oscar League. And it's just the way it is, and you just have to kind of ignore them and go, that's why I wrote a two-part piece on Martinez, because here's a guy that we should know something about, that he's going to be making a move in the next 2 years, and I've got a story coming out tonight on Dmitry Pirog, who's 30 years old and a top middleweight. He needs to make a move in the next few years. These are our storylines. These are the guys we should be thinking about. Manny's going to do
Bradley.
What Manny's going to do.
You know,
yeah,
and the
Timothy
Bradley
and Alexander.
Alexander, you know what I mean? These are the guys that are actually putting in the work, you know what I mean? I think that's what people kind of, you know, my thing is this, the whole 144, you know, and 145 and 142 is we hear this whole lot, and I've been hearing this a whole lot. It's like, okay, what other fighter have we seen move up in so many weight classes, you know? And my answer to that is not a whole lot. And the reason why is because if you really look at it, and that's why I said, where do we put him in place of history? You know, I know you have HBO that are just say the most retarded things in the world. Even ESPN, too. They say the dumbest thing. It's like they don't even research anything that comes out of their mouths at sometimes. But, you know, when you hear this weight division moving up in divisions and title belts, is if I was and I don't know how you guys feel about this, but if the first guy that pops into my head who decided to move up in weight and was looking fantastic was Tito Trinidad. Tito was at 147. He was struggling. Tito was cleaning out the whole 147 division before he decided to move up. He goes to 154, and he doesn't go after, you know, somebody that was not even campaigning in that division. He was actually going after – the two superstars of that division who were looked at to be these great 154 pounds. David Reed, then he goes after Fernando Vargas, giving us one of the most historical fights, you know, out of 2000. Then after that, he decides, hey, I want the middleweight title. But in reality, he was talking about Roy Jones before that, okay? Then he moves up in weight, and Don King feeds him William Jopley, okay? Now, this is food for thought. Let's say he stopped there at a middleweight. Do we judge him as a middleweight now, saying, hey, you know what? He went up to this division and jumps the middleweight division, leaving Bernard Hopkins, and goes to a light heavyweight, right? And he fights, I don't know, he fights Montel Griffin, knocks him out, and then stays there and retires. Do you see where I'm going with this game?
Well, I mean, it's just what these guys do. You know, it's when you hit a certain plateau, they're going to tailor everything towards themselves. And true greatness, you know, I'm not denigrating Manny. I think he's an excellent fighter. She's won some great fights. But, you know, I just look at Henry Armstrong, and I just go, here's a guy that went from, he won the featherweight title, jumps to welterweight, true welterweight, no juniors in between, jumps up there, but weighs significantly less than the champion, wins that title, comes back down to lightweight, beats that guy, goes up to middleweight and almost beats that guy. And he just weighed his best weight or underneath the limit that he needed to every time. And that, to me, is a measure of true greatness. And you're fighting in a time where there's like one champion and longer rounds. That's awesome. And it's hard to compare the eras because Manny doesn't have to fight by the same rules. And here's Rich Marotta. Let me bring him in.
Hello. You know, and I know some fight fans are going to be like, you know. Look,
here we are,
like
gentlemen.
I said, how you doing, Rich?
I'd like to introduce our guest first as we bring him in. For those of you who don't know him, he's currently the ringside color commentator on boxing's Top Rank Live series on Fox Sports Net. But he also, for me, is most well known for from 1999 to 2010, the neutral corner on AM 570 KLAC. I'd like to welcome in Rich Marotta, who was just inducted into the Sportscasters Hall of Fame, or elected to, rather. Welcome, Rich. How you doing?
Yes, thanks very much. Yeah, that induction will take place in January. Surprising honor and surprising moment for me, to be sure, but very happy about it and very happy to be with you guys.
It's kind of strange, Rich, because the very first radio show I did as a guest when I moved back to L.A. like 3 years ago was your show, and now you're on this show. It's really an honor, dude. It's kind of a trip, you know?
I am not accustomed to answering questions. I'm always accustomed to asking them.
Yeah, I'm not accustomed to asking people who normally ask questions, so, yeah, I'm a little nervous myself.
Well, Kendra, we were off in some exotic island watching boxing, a Goose and Tudor event down in
St. Lucia. We were in St. Lucia.
That's right. Yeah.
One of like something we were like, it was your media team and me, I think. It was basically it down there as far as, I don't think there's any other.
So
guys.
Gabriel was the third wheel. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, basically. it was pretty amazing time. It was like raining there during the fight. We're in the middle of like a cricket stadium that had been cordoned off. And we had to, you know, go underneath the tent. And I turned around and I thought the crowd was going to freak out. And they're all sitting there smiling. First boxing event in St. Lucia ever with their umbrellas. They were all ready, and they're just sitting there enjoying fights. It was pretty amazing.
It was a very odd setting, but a really great night, actually. Yeah, I think Andre Ward fought in that card.
Yeah, he did, against Roger Cantrell.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, out of Washington.
And Andre's come a long way since then.
Oh, yeah. Did you you follow a lot of guys coming up, and Andre's one of them. Did you ever expect him to be what he's become now?
Well, I would say maybe after five or six fights, maybe eight fights, I did not think so. And then I saw him kind of dramatically improve. There was a fight he fought up in Portland. I forget the name of the fighter that he fought, but he was knocked down, and he was knocked down hard.
By Boone, right?
Yes, in the second or third round of that fight. And he really showed me something that night, because that was a tough spot that he was in. He was in a real predicament. And he got up, and then as I watched him, I could see really dramatic improvement fight to fight after that. But I would say in the first few fights, I really had my doubts about Andre, but he has put those doubts, I think, to rest.
Another guy I know you're really fond of, I've listened to you have him on the show, is Juan Manuel Marquez. Could you just talk a little bit about some of your memories with him as he was coming up, and what you thought of his performance last weekend?
Well, his performance last weekend was sensational. I mean, is it possible he's getting better? I mean, at 37, I mean, it was just tremendous. He's such a sharp shooter, such a precisionist in there. And, you guys know that during my years at Forum Boxing, when we were televising the fights out of the Forum, two fights shows a month out of the Forum, and then one where they would go on the road to Las Vegas or Lake Tahoe or somewhere, Anaheim, but outside of the Forum. So it was 2-3 shows a month. And it became a real favorite of Mexican fighters who would come here and really make their bones, you know, in the United States. And there was just a series of them that came through, including Marco Antonio Barrera, and so many other, Mark Too Sharp Johnson basically became, he's not a Mexican fighter, but he became a great fighter, basically fighting at the Forum, Gennaro Hernandez, so many of them did. And Juan Manuel Marquez was this kid who came up. I can still remember the first time I ever saw him. I saw him, it was at Caesar's Palace. He was fighting a four-rounder at the end of our telecast.
Wow.
And I was so blown away by how good this kid looked. I said, I remember my comment was, let's see more of Juan Manuel Marquez. And boy, did we ever. And, I became quite good friends with Juan Manuel. He's a wonderful guy, really nice, down-to-earth person, a heck of a guy. And I always knew he had great talent within, and I was always hopeful that he would get to the point of acceptance and kind of validate what I felt was, overwhelming talent early in his career, later on. And finally, it took a long time. They made some missteps along the way. But he became what I believe is a truly great, truly great fighter and one of the all-time best ever to come out of Mexico.
I'm going to turn you over to my co-host, Dave Duenas.
Dave, hey, Rich, how you doing?
I'm very well.
Congratulations, first off, on being elected and stuff. Hey, Rich, I'm curious. Now that we've seen the changes in boxing, and it's evolved and it keeps doing it over and over, every decade we see it change and change and change. And we hear this term all the time, all-time great or even great. Can I ask you, what is the criteria, in your opinion, to measure a fighter to that term?
Well, I think for a fighter to be considered really great, you have to take a look at what he's accomplished now. And does he dominate the field now? Yes. Okay? Let's say he does dominate the field now. But then take him and apply what he's got and apply him, if you can, in your imagination, to see if he could have competed at the highest levels in every decade of the 20th century. Could a fighter, if you're talking about a Manny Pacquiao now, could he have competed, at this level in the 50s? Could he have competed at this level in the 30s? Could Roy Jones have done it? Could Bernard Hopkins have done it? Bernard Hopkins, to me, I always felt this guy is a great fighter. He's one of the really best ever, because I think I could drop Bernard Hopkins into any decade at any time, and he could go into the ring against a Harry Greb, or against Tony Zale, or against anyone in any decade, and compete at the highest level. Maybe he couldn't have beaten Sugar Ray Robinson, but he could have competed against anyone, I think, at the very highest levels. That, to me, is a sign of a great fighter.
Yes, I completely agree. Yeah, absolutely and stuff. How did you get your start into the boxing and to getting into commentating and everything?
Well, you know, I was... I was in Los Angeles. I was broadcasting. I broadcast Kings hockey in the late 70s, and then in the early 80s when the Oakland Raiders became the Los Angeles Raiders, I became a part of their broadcast.
Yeah.
And while I was doing that, I was also working at a radio station in Los Angeles, KNX Radio. But I was, you know, I was getting around pretty good. I mean, and I was getting fairly well known amongst all of those in sports. But boxing, you know, had been, since I was a kid, my favorite sport. And I just, you know, I loved the sport. I would always be at the fights. I would always be at the press conferences. And, you know, I would talk to, you know, the promoters, interview the fighters, whatever. I was around it. I was there. I was in the gym. The way you guys at Max Boxing are down at Wild Card or, you know, out in Bell or wherever. I mean, you know, visiting and getting down at that level with the, you know, with the fighters so that people know who you are. And I always kind of used to pass around the word. Hey, listen, if there's ever a chance, you know, I'm doing Raiders football. I'm doing this and that. If there's ever a chance I could get a chance to broadcast a fight, I would love to do it, you know, in whatever way that I possibly could. And so the opportunity came up. Don Chargan, who long ago used to promote here in the Los Angeles area, went up to Sacramento, of course, and it was with Golden Boy now. And Don Chargan, you know, put together kind of a quasi, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of a barbed wire network of fights that he would put on fights like at the sports arena or here or there.
Right.
And he brought me in to broadcast some of those fights. And then in like 1982 or 83, somewhere around there, I got an opportunity. It was actually on USA Network, and this was even before Sean O'Grady and Al Albert were doing those fights on USA Network. Myself and Alan Malamud, the late great sports writer with the Los Angeles Herald Examiner, we were by then friends with Don Chargan, and he was doing a couple of fights up in Las Vegas at the Showboat Hotel, which I don't even think exists anymore, and
wow.
They were on USA Network. And I still remember that was kind of like my first national exposure. I went on and we did a fight that night with Bruce Curry, who I can remember like really intimidated me when I was interviewing him. I was scared to death of Bruce, who I thought was nuts, but he was a pretty good fighter and a pretty good main event fighter. And we went on that night and, John Ellis, who you might remember has done some promoting in Southern California, he was a big heavyweight at the time, known as the White Tornado, and he was on the same card that night. And that was my first national card. And then, you know, just kind of piecemeal, picking up a piece here, a piece there. And then in the early 90s, I took over as a regular on the Forum Boxing. And before you knew it, I was doing boxing as a regular and actually becoming – the main, you know, my main sport, you know, outside of the studio.
You know, and back in the 80s, too, the fighters had such better and cooler nicknames than now, you know.
Well, you know, I think the Easton Assassin was a hell of a nickname.
Yeah.
For Larry Holmes. Hitman, I mean, that's a perfect nickname. Hitman.
Yeah.
And just the word iron in front of Mike Tyson's name, you know, that said it all.
Right. Exactly.
You know, now you got guys, you know, who are like, you know, some of the Mexican fighters, they'll be like, you know, the Crazy Rooster or something, you know. El Pollo Loco.
Swamp Donkey and Sugar Poo are two of my favorites.
But
you're actually the very first guy that I met on the boxing beat for Castillo Corrales 3. I showed up, you know, literally came from the airport to the press conference and was all confused. And I walked up to you and I said, "Excuse me, are you Lou DiBella?" And, and you laughed about like that and said, "Yeah, I get that a lot, but no."
I still get that. I show up
right.
I'll show up at fights and, you know, fans will go, "Hey, Lou! I'm not Lou."
That is so funny.
Hey, Lou, who's Sergio Martinez going to fight next?
By the way, Gabriel, I really enjoyed your story about Sergio Martinez. You know, he is a tremendous story. And, you know, what a guy. And to come to where he is now, you know, and I think he's on everybody's list as third pound for pound, or maybe fourth if you want to put Juan Manuel Marquez up at the third spot. But he's either third or fourth, you know, in just about all of the pound for pound list. And you know, the guy is like 35, and which isn't so old for somebody to be in the top five, you know, pound for pound.
Right.
But to come to the party and arrive on that scene at that late in life, that is unbelievable.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
It's just an incredible story, man. I mean, you know, coming from that little town, Quilmes, you know, Argentina, and you know, they've been invaded by the Spanish for like 100 years. They held them off and then were defeated. They moved to what is now that town. And this guy from that town invades Spain to take over the world. I just thought it was a hell of a story. And when I finally started to research him, and the more I dug, the more I found out, I was like, this is going to be a two-part epic. It's like the longest thing I've ever written. And
right.
I'm glad you read it. I appreciate that, man.
It did keep going, but it's very interesting. And I love it. You know, I love these long essays in boxing, you know. I love a piece like that. You know, Steve Kim's pieces, of course, take me like 45 minutes to go through his columns. Thomas Hauser's columns, they're great, great essays. You know, I always try to save one and print one out so I can read it on the plane when I'm flying. You know, when I'm flying somewhere. You know, we really have some very good journalists in boxing. There are some, you know, wannabes that are kind of you know, have come on the scene and you know, come to the party right now, but I think, you know, they haven't paid dues like some of the people and haven't been, you know, down, you know, been able to grovel in the dirt, been over there in the gyms like we talked about and hung around the fighters. And so that kind of bugs me about a lot of the boxing writers now. But I never have that problem reading you guys and the people that I mentioned there, and especially those long pieces. I just love it. I love it.
Well,
we don't get any coverage. Let's face it, guys. We don't get any coverage
right.
Mainstream media anymore. I mean, it's very
and true. And the coverage that we do get, Rich, and the coverage that we do get, it's laughable. I mean, it's not even worth them airing it. You know.
Yeah. Right now, boxing used to be covered on a fairly regular basis. I know just in the Southern California area, because that's where I was centered, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, you know, Alan Malamud and, you know, Mel Derslag and Bud Ferrillo. You know, these were guys that loved boxing. Doug Krikorian is still around with the Long Beach paper. These are guys that loved boxing, showed up, you know, and immersed themselves in it. But they're from the mainstream media, the big newspapers, you just don't see that much immersion anymore of their top writers, where the guy is strictly, say, even a boxing writer. Bill Dwyer does some good pieces for the LA Times, but
yeah,
you know, he's basically a general columnist and a feature kind of writer. So it's become an internet sport. I mean, that's the truth of it. Boxing has become an internet sport, but thank God that, you know, people are tuned into it.
Well, yeah, and we
absolutely
don't have a word count, so we don't have to fill into a column, so we can write as long as we want.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Well, Rich, it was an absolute pleasure, man, and congratulations once again, and look forward to talking to you.
Thanks very much. You know, and I've been hearing a lot of congratulations for the last 2 days. You know, it was kind of nice because we just found out about this and just was basically released yesterday. But it was more or less released to the Southern California media. And then Rachel Charles, who's a boxing publicist, offered to help me get this out basically to the boxing people, the news that I've been elected to the Southern California Sportscasters Hall of Fame. And let's face it, guys, how many times is somebody who's, you know, part of boxing, I mean, sometimes those in boxing will honor their own, but when the people outside of boxing, you know, honor somebody who's inside of boxing, and so
absolutely,
you know, that it was kind of neat, and I wanted it to get out to the boxing public,
yeah.
And I'm glad it did, and your show certainly helps with that news tonight, and I really appreciate it. By the way, I'll be ringside Saturday night in Anaheim. I'll be calling the fight with the show at. The Honda Center in
Ooh.
Harm's Way with the Nonito Donaire and Sidorenko and a bunch of pretty good fights, Urbano Antion fighting Humberto
sure.
Soto. I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to working with Nick Charles and Gennaro Hernandez as, my partners on that telecast on Saturday night.
Well, I'll be at the ringside, so I'll see you there.
Oh, great. Yeah. I look forward to that. Thanks so much. And I really appreciate you guys having me on tonight. Thanks very,
hey, thanks
very much.
Thanks for coming on, Rich. That it was great having you on as well. And, yeah, make sure you take a listen to us as well, Rich. You can give us some pointers on what we're doing wrong.
I don't know. It sounds pretty good to me. And since I ended my radio show, I'm glad you guys are carrying it on.
There you go.
Awesome,
thank
man.
You again.
Thank you for paving the way. All right, man. Take care.
You're quite welcome. Take care, man.
Well, there you go. You know, another 3 hours of boxing, you know, and it's almost that time to say goodbye and see you next week. But don't forget, if you're Spanish speaking and you want to hear everything in Spanish, you can tune in this Tuesday at 5 o'clock West Coast time, 8 o'clock East Coast time. Live in the ring español, siempre boxeo, siempre en español. And this is your host David Duarte with Gabriel Montoya and Ernesto Gavillon signing off, guys. And you guys have a good night. And enjoy the fights this weekend.
Yep. See you guys.